It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running with a brand new broadcast week. It is the 7th day of December, 2020. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Hey, I did it early this time. Got that out of the way. If you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that takes place during the 3 hours in which this program is live Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, then run on over to headon.live. Click on chat room. If you've never picked out a screen name and a password before, do it now and jump right in where you will be greeted by early arriver Squeaky and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has folded space today to become man cave under 73 lovely degrees with a fire weather watch. Because, well, you get those in December now in Northern California. Maybe in another month or so, we'll go back to being able to talk about climate change some more. Yeah. Now, Sparky is capably assisted by pinch-hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all-around great guy, Brother Deacon Steve from Georgistan. So everything is good there, and hopefully we'll have ourselves a humdinger of a program this evening. And of course, every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. So thanks go out over the course of the weekend. Let's see, that would be the 6th and the 5th. So let me scroll down here. Thank you very kindly to our subscribers over the course of the weekend. Like I said, thank you to Roberto and Bernice, Batty Boop, thank you. Thank you to Kevin in Colorado Springs. Thank you to Lauren in the far frozen wastes of Alberta? Yes. I think Edmonton, right? Yeah, maybe. James in Illinois, thank you. Thank you to Kenda in Missouri. Thank you to Kim and Malin in New Jersey. Thank you to Michael in Madison. Thank you to Don in West Tennistan. Thank you to Charlene in Rogues Island. Thank you, John. Thank you to Kitty in Boston. And special thanks going out to Joan in Talibandiana and an anonymous friend who have gotten us started on the fundraiser for my oral surgery that hopefully will take place at the end of this month. Thank you as well to James and Brock. And thank you to Todd getting us started this evening. Todd down in South Carolina stand. Thank you, Todd. So what does that mean? That means the fundraising goal, just the regular fundraising goal for keeping this program going, because we finished up not fully funded last week. The fundraising goal to get even by the end of the evening is $640. Phew! Yeah, but it is. And so we'll do the best that we can. $640 to go. And now, as for the fundraiser for the
As far as the fundraiser for the oral surgery is concerned, I'm probably going to be putting up a GoFundMe page just to keep that separate. And I can say confidently that everybody who kicks in $120 or more will receive, because we have received, if you don't already have one, a wonderful horn coffee mug with which to enjoy your morning or evening beverage or whenever it is that you listen to the program. And, well, hopefully I won't ruin the beverage for you, although there's a distinct chance of that this evening. But we haven't mailed them out yet. So everybody who jumps in on the oral surgery bandwagon will be getting a horn coffee mug. Yes. And I'm excited to be able to mention that. So 6:40, and I'd like to, it would just be wonderful to be able to stop talking about that, but kind of hard to do and keep this program on the air. Regardless, we have things that we do to start the program. Bob! Day of Infamy. And that's what Franklin Delano Roosevelt called December the 7th, 1941. Joey writes, well, it's December 7th, and there may be a few people out there, not very many, really, who remember sitting by an old radio and listening to FDR declare this day to be a date that will live in infamy. Oh, God, Jeffrey's jumping in early. Jeffrey explains, and today the old fart Rudy Giuliani announced that he discovered yesterday he has the corona. In total disbelief, a constipated Rudy just farted and said, no shit. Rudy then told the press that this date will live in infamy. Jeffrey, I thought you were going to take the high road on this one. Oh, no, because Jeffrey's going to keep going. Considering the corona has struck Rudolph, Trump's favorite brown-nosed reindeer, will Rudy be attending all the Christmas parties? Yes, Jeffrey, I imagine Rudy's nose will still fit right in the middle of all the morass morons, because at this point, Rudy's just pretty much a pain in the ass to everybody. Sort of explains why it was that he was able to let go of that squeaker in Pennsylvania. And, you know, they usually say he who smelt it dealt it, or the smeller is the feller. Well, you can't accuse Rudy Giuliani of that, because he's probably lost his sense of taste and smell. God knows he never had any taste, if you've ever seen that picture of him in a dress. Well, I tell you what, I'm off and running this evening. Yeah, I am. Anyway. Ironically, the Pearl Harbor attack came 28 years to the day after President William H. Taft's State of the Union address defending the decision to base U.S. naval operations in the Pacific at Pearl Harbor in Hawaii instead of the Philippines. Speaking of Taft, who, unlike Trump, had no graft, however, Trump and Taft had a few things in common, with the first one being they both could have played Santa Claus at the White House Christmas party, considering their girth. Hey, no fat shaming. Now what, Jeffrey? Giraffe remarks, yes, both Trump and Taft put the rotund into the rotunda. All right, that's a little better quality, a little more vigorous cowbell for that one. However, unlike Trump, Taft was a kind-hearted, jolly man who wanted to be loved and respected as a person. He had the perfect temperament for a judicial leader and would be the only president to be placed on the land's Supreme Court. Unlike Trump, who may be placed in a jail cell before landing in a court soon after his presidency. On the other hand, like Trump, Taft seldom took any initiative in legislative matters and had little talent for leadership. Taft was very indecisive, as he would ponder on an issue forever in an attempt to see all sides of a question. Yes, Jeffrey. Jeffrey highlights the differences. Trump only ponders on all sides of the cheeseburger and what kind of a tweet he can have for dessert. Oh, dear. As Todd in South Carolina Stan points out, I can make the cowbell speak. According to sources, Taft ate a dozen eggs, a pound of bacon, and mounds of pancakes every morning. Too bad McDonald's wasn't around in Taft's time, as he could have eaten an entire McFranchise all by himself. Yes, Taft and Trump. Those two presidents have a legacy of just eating up time. This has been Joey's Journal for More in Monday, the 7th day of December 2020. with Giraffe looking high and wide for the leftovers from the right. Ow. Jeffrey. Whatever shall we do? I know. Lee in New York with an obligatory Star Trek reference. The first and possibly worst Star Trek movie, Star Trek the Motion Picture, was released on this day in 1979. Can it really have been that long? I would have been 16, and yes, we went to see it, and it probably was the worst, but I think it's been reappreciated a little bit, Lee. And bless him, it was the first movie and had been gone for so long. Who wouldn't have been transfixed by all that, all the special effects of the Enterprise going over at the right side of the screen? And 15 minutes later, we cut back to the Enterprise, and it's not quite to the halfway point of the screen. Another hour later, and it's just crossing the halfway mark. I am Viger. Yes. Mm-hmm. And our daily reminder, courtesy of Lou in PA, January the 5th, that's the date of the special runoff elections between Reverend Raphael Warnock and Attila the Hun Leffler, and John Ossoff and David Still a Debate Chicken Purdue. Yeah. And my goodness gracious, they had a debate last night. Well, okay. Warnock and Leffler debated. And John Ossoff talked while Clint Eastwood's empty chair did stand-in duty for David Debate Chicken Purdue. I think John Ossoff burned him rather nicely, saying that maybe he's not here because he's afraid he'd incriminate himself and wanted to take the Fifth Amendment. That was very good. Very good. And today, by the way, and I guess it's too late now, well, it's the last day to... Is it the last day to register to vote? If you're not already registered in Georgia, maybe too late now. Being as how we're past the close of business. And so, from here on out, it is strictly and exclusively a matter of get out the vote. And my God, if the people of Georgia cannot see the difference between doing nothing and letting a country continue to suffer and keeping the country in the diabolical, maniacal clutches of one of the nastiest old racist assholes in this country, the de facto ruler of this country, the tyrant Mitch McConnell, versus actually trying to do something for the American people. Well, at this point in time, it's not like all that's left is hope. And hope is a thin reed anyway. Now it's work. Nothing but work. Just hard work. Remember, Edison? I'm a firm believer in luck. I find the harder I work, the more I have of it. Yeah. So thank you, Lou. That's your January the 5th Georgia runoff reminder. And this, to get us started from earlier today, from our buddy Kyle in Kentucky, Stan. Somewhere along the way, Kyle, I think you got a book in you, buddy. Subject: NFL officials were in on the coup to
stop the steal.
Bob, my father has outdone himself, and so I had to share it for the entertainment of the listening audience. He said yesterday that the officials who couldn't call the Bengals-Dolphins game correctly and get control of it before two fights happened is further proof that Democrat cities ignored law and order and let the terrorists loot, and since they don't enforce rules, they let socialists and radicals vote after deadlines just so they can get Trump out of office. Whew, I think I lost a couple of IQ points just reading that, Kyle. You gotta warn a guy. I wish I were kidding, Kyle says. This one, I know it is. This one's funny. Yep, even the referees. And if you did bother to watch the Georgia debates last night, the one between Attila the Hun Leffler and Reverend Warnock really was quite the dandy. Because not since the heady days of 2012, when the Romney bot was roving the land in animatronic stiffness, I have binders full of women, have we seen a more robotic and bad animatronic performance than that of Kelly Attila the Hun Leffler, the richest person in the Senate of the United States, and the spouse of the head of the New York Stock Exchange, in case anybody's forgotten that little fact. Yeah. That's true. Otto DeShott in the chat room pointing out, we're radical liberals, Bob. That we are. That we are. Mm-hmm. And so Kelly Leffler knew that she had talking points and she was going to hit them, by God. And so every time Reverend Warnock spoke and she got to respond, she made sure to call him a socialist, radical, leftist, commie, pinko, fascist, Rosicrucian, Illuminati. Well, I mean, she couldn't have gotten that much out of her animatronic mouth with a bet and an upgrade from Dell. But still, that's what she did. Why, look over there. He's a radical commie. Yeah, says the woman who insider traded her way to fame and fortune as the COVID pandemic was about to hit. Which reminds me, the folks at Midas Touch have come out with a delightful little ad. Steve in Georgia Stan put me onto it. It's a dandy. Let me get that thing going here. Oh, damn it. It'd be nice if I could spell. There they are, yes. And apparently it's popular enough that you have to watch an ad first, so goodbye. Now.
It was the night before Christmas, as Georgia turns blue. Most Georgians were suffering, apart from these...
Wait a minute, what am I doing wrong here? Hold on. That's an interesting tech problem to be having. Ah, there we go. Button problem. I need a producer.
'Twas the night before Christmas, as Georgia turns blue. Most Georgians were suffering, apart from these two. That is, Looting Leffler and Chicken Perdue. Their stockings were stuffed from the stocks that they sold when they heard COVID was coming before we were told. They sold shares in casinos, airlines, TJ Maxx, and invested in drugs and in medical masks. They bought stocks that would rise, sold stocks that would fall. It could be their hearts were two sizes too small. They played down the virus, said we'd all be fine, while Leffler bought a jet on the taxpayer's dime. And don't get me started on Chicken Perdue. How chicken is he? A debate he won't do. So come one, come all, let's vote by the 5th and make Warnock and Ossoff your two Senate picks. Midas Touch is responsible for the content of this advertising.
And that is an unpaid ad placement. Just because I appreciate the art of it. And it's good to see them campaigning together, just as I had suggested early in the process when this began, when we knew this was going to work this way. Yeah. Steve in New York, what Leffler really wanted to say in a whispering voice, and he's a Negro too. Odd how our minds work so similarly. Steve and me and the rest of the community. Because I almost wonder, what would What would it be like if Reverend Warnock said, you know, sometimes I wonder how she refers to me when she thinks nobody's listening? Because, well, you don't want to take that bet? No. So thanks to Steve from Georgistan for that link. That was good stuff. And the animation was fantastic. The Grinches of Georgia, if you want to go to YouTube and see it. The Grinches of Georgia by Midas Touch. And, you know, really, green suits those two. Green like money, green with envy, green with avarice. All of the above. Mm-hmm. Hey, thanks. Big thanks to Jack in Shreveport getting us started this evening. That's wonderful. We are now down to $590 to come up even. That means we have finished fundraising for last Thursday, which is awesome. Thank you, Jack. And thank you to Jeremy jumping in. And so that takes us to 585. 585, and we'll make some progress along the way. Thank you. Thank you, Jeremy. Much appreciated. Stop it, Bob, says Lee in New York. We have animatronics, too. But I still don't know if Al Gore ever worked as a Disney entertainer. He could have. Nah, he's not that. Compared to the Romney bot, Lee, really? Yeah. Not quite. Flavio pointing out, my opponent, Radical Socialist Democrat Warnock, and that was her, my opponent, Radical Socialist Democrat Warnock, who said things in sermons once, and that was her entire argument, the entire debate. And it was. It's damn difficult to describe what a machine she is. And she is. She's a machine. She's a money-making, insider-trading, stock-dumping machine. So, yeah. David Chicken Purdue, meanwhile, didn't have much to say. Okay, he didn't have anything to say. He wasn't there. This is Georgia. This is the Deep South. The South is supposed to be all, you know what? Sometimes you just got to fight a battle, even though you feel like you may wind up on the wrong end of it. You just got to show up is what you got to do. You got to show up. Are Georgians really going to feel good about sending a guy back to Washington who's scared of a debate? Because this isn't one of those situations where his challenger doesn't have a snowball's chance in hell of beating him. I mean, for instance, here in West Virginia, I don't recall, maybe there was, a debate between the person who challenged Shelley Moore and Shelley Moore. I don't recall seeing any ads by Shelley Moore, but I don't watch a lot of local TV either. But there was no... You are under no obligation, for instance. You are under no obligation if you are, say you're an incumbent. I don't think you're under any obligation to debate the nominee of the Chicken and Dumplings Party, who has not a snowball's chance in hell of getting anywhere near defeating you. You can blow that person off. You can say, no, thank you. It's beneath the dignity of the office. No. And you can say the same. You can pretty much say the same thing to any third party. Because if there's no realistic chance of victory, there's no realistic need to debate. But this wasn't that. On the other hand, Brother Deacon Steve says, as long as he has an R next to his name, that probably is the operating philosophy for a whole lot of voters in Georgia, you know, because them Democrats, they get together in the basement of a pizza joint in D.C. and they eat deep fried baby with gravy, blood gravy. Well, there went dinner in the Eastern Standard Time Zone. Yeah, and they get together and they say Hail Satan and all that kind of stuff and try to figure out a way to have abortions 5 years after the kid's done been born. Oh, no, wait, that's Republicans. But in reality, that's how it goes. Hey, thank you, Elizabeth. Thank you very, very kindly. We are now down to 560 to go to get caught up with fundraising for the week. We're working on funding for Friday. $260 more dollars, and last week is fully funded. Thank you, Elizabeth. Thank you so very kindly. And Steve in New York wants to find somebody to jine up with to put $15 with. Steve says, I'll put forward 15 bucks if somebody will jump in with me. So that'll be mighty handy. $15 challenge, courtesy of Steve in New York. Steve was corresponding with me earlier about how weird and isolated and just crummy this holiday season is. And Lord God, I do so get it. I understand. And yes, deep fried baby. Steve in New York says, oh, dear, dear Bob, we broil our baby. Don't want those extra calories from frying. I know. I was thinking about that. And God knows the gravy alone. Well, what are you eating there? Pretty good. Baby what? Baby. That is a passage from Gary Jennings' classic historical fiction novel, Aztec. Mm-hmm. Darlene sent this along. COVID-19 live updates, the latest from the New York Times. Britain is readying a mass vaccination drive. New York City reopened elementary schools. And Trump officials passed when Pfizer offered to sell more vaccine doses in late summer.
No, we don't need that. We're going to get some of Big Bad Vladdy Daddy's Putinka vaccine.
Yeah. And in reality, it's a hell of a thing. I mean, now that everybody pretty much understands that he's done, and pretty much everybody does understand that he's done, Joe Biden has secured his 270th electoral vote. He will get to 306, which, remember, President Knit for Brains declared to constitute a landslide. But, yeah. On the one hand, the Trump administration did, as Darlene points out, decline to purchase more vaccine when offered the opportunity so to do by Pfizer. Eventually, we will find that the depths of perfidy of this administration, no bottom. In that New York Times article that Darlene mentioned, they write, as the administration scrambles to try to purchase more doses of the vaccine, President Trump plans on Tuesday to sign an executive order
to ensure the United States government prioritizes getting the vaccine to American citizens before sending it to other nations.
The problem is it doesn't mean much of anything. The New York Times reports the vaccine being produced by Pfizer and its German partner BioNTech is a two-dose treatment, meaning that 100 million doses is enough to vaccinate only 50 million Americans. The vaccine is expected to receive authorization for emergency use in the U.S. as soon as this weekend, with another vaccine developed by Moderna also likely to be approved for emergency use soon. On November 11th, 2 days after Pfizer first announced early results indicating that its vaccine was more than 90% effective, the European Union announced that it had finalized a supply deal with Pfizer and BioNTech for 200 million doses, a deal they began negotiating months earlier. Shipments could begin by the end of the year, and the contract includes an option for 100 million more doses. Kind of leaving Merca out in the cold, which Trump is perfectly okay with, because if he can't have this really is like the end of a bad, violent, dysfunctional relationship.
Well, if I can't have the presidency, America can just die.
Meanwhile, they are going to start vaccinating in Great Britain soon. And we will, I guess that means that Great Britain gets to be the guinea pig. And this is the part of the program where I try to forget that I watched the beginning of I Am Legend. No, I'm kidding. That's a joke. I mean, I did watch it, but let's not be thinking about that. No. By the way, amid all this talk of vaccines, an interesting little news item. In a story from The Hill, they report that government officials and healthcare groups are growing increasingly concerned about nation states and criminal hackers targeting the supply chain for COVID-19 vaccines. Concerns have been amplified as the U.S. prepares to roll out the first vaccines later this month, yada, yada, yada. Groups involved in creating and shipping the vaccines are a prime target for potential cyber attacks. Mark Rogers, the executive director of cybersecurity at OPTA, told The Hill this past Friday, "We've noticed an uptick in attacks against all aspects of the vaccine supply chain, from research through to manufacturing and distribution." And he's actively involved, Rogers is, in the COVID-19 CTI League. This is not a bowling league. They track and help defend against cyber attacks that are aimed at health groups. "My suspicion," Rogers continued, "is that all parties in the cyber criminal underground, from ordinary criminals to nation states, recognize that the vaccines represent a golden opportunity and are responding as such." The Wall Street Journal, for instance, reported that North Korea hackers targeted at least 6 pharma groups in the U.S., the U.K., and South Korea that were working on a vaccine. And the CISO of Johnson & Johnson, who are expected to come out with their own vaccine fairly soon, Allison, said, "All chief information security officers in healthcare are seeing attempted penetrations by nation-state actors, not just North Korea, every single minute of every single day." She said that at the Aspen Institute's Cyber Summit earlier last week. And so it affects everything from cold storage to logistics, a global phishing campaign to try to get control of those cold storage units. One major cold storage group had already been targeted before the alerts were issued by the Department of Homeland Security's Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. Because, well, why not? I mean, it's 2020, for fuck's sake. God, it'd be nice if we had competent people in charge, wouldn't it? Yeah. And so, we wait, I guess. Because, among other things, Moderna and Pfizer have also, I guess you could say, blown a raspberry at Nitwit Nero. Yeah, because Nitwit Nero is holding a vaccine summit. That'll come later this week. And both Pfizer and Moderna have taken a pass on attending. And who can blame them, given that there's been a ton of hard work done? And Nitwit Nero's tried to take credit for all of it. This is that point in the play where people realize that they're soon going to be able to light a cigarette in the bunker. And that he has gone from being a roaring maniac animal to a tuskless elephant stumbling off to where elephants go when it's time. If I was still playing bumper music, I'd use, the Boomtown Rats' Elephant's Graveyard. And I'll say again that I'm getting kind of weary of seeing all these predictions about how he's coming back in 2024. Maybe he will. But Jesus Christ, he'd be 79, maybe 80 years old then. If he was this much of a doddering, blithering idiot now, what will he be by the time he's 80? And remember, his old man, his Klansman daddy, his brain was Swiss cheesed by Alzheimer's disease by the time he died at, like, what, 90, 92? Fred hadn't been okay for rather a long time. Yeah. And this, of course, will feed into his paranoia that the
vaccine companies could have announced the vaccine earlier, and then I would have been reelected.
Funny how all that voter fraud that he alleges wouldn't have affected him back then. Jesus, he's nuts. God, he makes Captain Queeg look like Albert Einstein. Yeah, with geometric precision. And I just had a note from Kim in Minnesota. Minnesota ranks second in new virus cases per capita in 2 weeks. Sadly, my state is next to South Dakota and other odious repig lick and run states, so therefore we've been elevated in COVID status. Moreover, the fuckhead South Dakota governor, Kristi Noem, was in Georgia stumping for the two Senate criminals. Oh, the humanity. Yeah, and see, that's another one of those flaws in the Constitution that these last four seemingly endless years have exposed. And that is that the federal government has primacy over interstate travel and transport. And so even if Minnesota wanted to do the responsible thing and block every means of South Dakotans entering Minnesota, constitutionally speaking, couldn't do it. Remember, Kristi Noem, we knew how bad she was early in all of this when the various indigenous tribes in South Dakota set up their own roadblocks and said, no, sorry, no disease-bearing white folks are allowed onto the reservation. Because, well, the indigenous people of South Dakota had seen that damn movie before, and it didn't end well. And Kristi Noem threatened.
How dare you?
And so you can't roadblock South Dakotans from coming into Minnesota. So God only knows how many cases of the Rona Kristi Noem and her dirty disease-bearing staff brought with her when she went to stump in Georgia. But then again, if you saw the footage, and bless his heart, and I mean that in a good way, Brother Deacon Steve tried to take one for the team and watch a little bit of the Trump rally this past weekend. And after a while, he said, I can't take it, Bob. I can't take it. I'm bailing out. To which I responded, get out of there. Get out, Steve. Steve, acknowledge. The next message read only, I need a shower. He described the maggot rally of the weekend in Georgia as chilling. It's the ramblings of a delusional madman. And that's exactly That's exactly what it was. Because that's exactly who he is. You see what we've got this evening? Let's see, it was November the 9th when, gosh, almost fully a month ago. Really? That long? When COVID Caligula took to the Twitter and said,
as I have long said, Pfizer and the others would only announce a vaccine after the election because they didn't have the courage to do it before. Likewise, the U.S. FDA should have announced it earlier, not for political purposes, but for saving lives.
Well, those were lives he really didn't care about when you get right down to it. Because he's a lie hopper, to use the language of the long ago 9/11 truther movement. There were my hoppers, made it happen on purpose, versus lie hoppers, let it happen on purpose. Only this isn't a conspiracy theory. This is verified in fact. This is negligence on a monstrous criminal level. He let it happen on purpose. And he especially shit his pants when the market tanked. So, I don't suppose there will be a trial, but damn, there should be. But earlier today, when she took to the air on MSNBC, former, and I suppose still loyal Bushy, Nicole Wallace, who was right there in the comm shop of the White House when so much of the evil that torments us now was in its gestational phase. Remember the Brooks Brothers riot in South Florida? Yeah, some of those very same people would be involved with the Trump campaign. They don't like to talk about that, but with her panel today, Nicole Wallace predicted that Donald Trump isn't going away if we don't stop covering Trump's stupid human tricks. And so she's justifying continuing to cover most of what he says and does by saying, this is a war on election results, and the reason this is something, as your wife wrote, Susan Glasser wrote, we cannot avert our gaze now. Now is when he's most dangerous, not just to the president-elect or people who have been his critics, but to everyone that voted. He's trying to eradicate the entire 2020 election result, and Republicans are standing by, if not applauding, and then looking the other way when armed mobs end up outside the homes of statewide office holders who had nothing to do with certifying the result. Yeah, here's the bottom line with all of that. All of these Republicans who are saying, yeah, we need to recount, we need a hand audit, we need to compare ballot signatures, blah, 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 and agreeing with him and sticking their noses so far up his fundament that they can see, you can see their smiling faces when he yawns. They, on the other hand, accept the results of their election. And so it gets particularly uncomfortable in places like, Pennsylvania, where, in fact, as John Fetterman, the lieutenant governor, pointed out, 99.2 or 99.8% of Republicans voted for the bill that prevented absentee ballots from being canvassed or even any kind of anything until after the day of the election, creating the chaos that was Pennsylvania. Republicans voted for it, and they're now out there running around saying that that's why Donald Trump lost. And I've been meaning to add this, if I haven't, I don't think I have. I could be wrong, but I get the idea that John Fetterman is a politician to watch. And I don't mean that in a bad way. It's been a long time since I've heard a politician that was as plain spoken and sort of blue collar as what John Fetterman is. He has a ton of political talent. Now, I'm sure if you asked some member of the Sparkle Fart Propelled Unicorn Cavalry Purity Patrol, I'm sure he's far from being ideologically pure enough. I mean, for all I know, he ties his shoelaces with loop, swoop, and pull instead of bunny ears. And we all know what that means. Neoliberal establishment shill! But there's something engaging about Lieutenant Governor Fetterman. There's something inherently trustworthy because, well, I'll tell you, he's got a kind of a Harry Truman vibe because he speaks plainly. For instance, today in an interview that I saw on social media, he referred to the Republicans in Pennsylvania with a phrase that really did resonate with me. He referred to them as the whole snake-handling jamboree. The Republicans in Pennsylvania. The whole snake-handling jamboree. Why, that's almost like it came straight out of prayer meeting Wednesday. And you gotta respect that because that means that he also probably gets pretty close to what Harry Truman was talking about oh so many years ago, when the phrase took root in the zeitgeist of the day. Give 'em hell, Harry. And at one point in time, somebody hollered, "Give 'em hell, Harry." And Harry Truman responded and said, "I just give them the facts and they think it's hell." And that's a lot of what John Fetterman has been doing over these last few weeks. I mean, if you are unfamiliar with him, look up some clips. This guy's good. This guy has a vibe to him. I'd love to see him challenge, at some point in time, challenge Pat Toomey for his seat in the Senate of the United States. And see, there it is. Didn't take long. Fetterman allowed Ed Rendell to draft him to siphon votes from Sestak and ran Katie McGinty too. Fetterman split the vote and lost to Toomey. Rendell hates Sestak and gave us Toomey instead. Well, that's past. Maybe what's past is prologue. But he's damn sure hitting the Republicans in the chops and making them like it. Ah, Toomey isn't running again. Thanks. Well, maybe that means that'll be an open seat. That could be good, too. Oh, and as to Kelly Attila the Hun Leffler, Eileen in New York reminds me, you forgot, she's suffering from Botox overdose that seems to have oozed into her brain, making her a before-slash-ugly-slash-stupid Barbie. How can somebody that stupid have that much money? Well, it's lovely to see what happens when, you know, you're born. Maybe she's born with it. Maybe it's convertible debentures. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Let's see. I guess, Steve in New York's telling me we had a Chantel burp. We seem to be having those from time to time. We had some of those during Dr. Bill's program today. Hopefully that won't, hopefully we won't have a bunch of those. But then again, it is, it's a toasty 60 degrees here in the studio because it's a non-toasty 28 degrees with snow showers outside the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion. And I don't. This will be our first winter with the current incarnation of Chantel. I do not know how it handles cold weather. Don't send me an email about how that doesn't affect the internet. I know, but it does affect. It does impact the internet in West Virginia. Remember, I've had internet service here that ran under the bed and hid every time it thundered 50 miles away. So that. Meanwhile, in terms of fear, Megan says, I'm more scared of Trumpers raising the specter of Iwanka as president than Nitwit Nero. That's the real plan. Unless she's in prison, and that's a possibility. I mean, you know, dare to dream. The goal is because COVID Caligula never got to fuck Don Jr., so he probably feels more sense of attachment to precious princess Iwanka, my daddy Trump Kushner. And he wants her to be the first female president, because that would be the ultimate finger in the eye to Hillary Clinton, because he's still, you know, still running against Hillary Clinton. Yeah. Steve says, you're letting Trump off too easily. That was not negligence. This is recklessness or even willfulness. This is callous disregard for the health and safety of human beings. And it is criminal. Tom Cotton 2024, Flavio says, is what will happen if the Democrats, upon securing the Senate, continue doing Melvin Milquetoast and compromise with the Republicans, you know, like they always compromise with the Democrats. If the Democrats don't hit the deck running and play smash-mouth football this time around, say bye-bye, and we'll get an intelligent, more efficient, more ruthless, and more effective Trump. That's 2024. We still have to worry about 2022. But wait, there's more. We still have to worry about 2020, and in particular, January the 5th, 2021. And if we can get Ossoff and Warnock into the Senate, then you got to keep Joe Manchin from fucking us all, and keep him in line, so that Kamala Harris can tell Chinless Mitch to sit down and shut the fuck up. We cling to what we can cling to that might support us from day to day during these most dark and dreary days of the year, unless you're in, like, you know, Hawaii, maybe Puerto Rico. Yeah, Puerto Rico's warm. The light is fading. We are, 2 weeks or so from the winter solstice? And, yeah, I know. It's even, the further north you go, the darker it gets. I understand the way the planet sort of works, but then the light will begin to grow. And so we hang on to what we can hang on to. Win Georgia first. Any talk of Iwanka or Tom Cotton or Flavio, how could you do that? You left out that new and different kind of Republican, Ben Sasse of Nebraska. Yeah. He doesn't appreciate being left out like that. And neither does Nimrata Haley. I wonder if Nimrata and Iwanka hate each other's guts. I like to hope that they do. But that's just because I'm a merry and jolly kind of progressive radio host. And so, you know, Flavio, when you say play smash mouth football this time around, what do you mean? Because I don't think... If you can get those two seats in Georgia, there's going to have to be some horse trading done. You're going to have to be some horse trading done to get Joe Manchin to stay remotely in line, because he will always be a threat to finally behave within his his essential nature and just go over and be a Republican. I'd like to hope that the thing that stops him from doing that is the very presence of Mitch McConnell himself, because I don't think those two like each other. I mean, they're both pro-coal and all of that crap, but, you know, got to remember, Mitch McConnell actively campaigned against Manchin in Manchin's own home state. Yeah, Flavio says, oh, yeah, I was almost forgetting about him. He's been making noises about being an obstructionist against the socialist radicals in the Democratic Party. Yeah, I know, because, among other things, he showed up today on, what was it? I got to check here. I mean, I don't have a check. I mean, I have to peruse and find out. I think he showed up on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. No, it wasn't. I had a note. I know. Yeah. I had a note from a good friend of ours. He showed up on The View. Yeah. Shameless Joe of The View. Manchin was on the show today, and the women gave him softball questions with no follow-up. He talked about Medicare for All and used the line, "How can we pay for Medicare for all when we can't afford Medicare for some?" Very clever, not. I wish that just once someone would ask people like Joe Manchin or Joe Biden how we could afford to give up the $3.5 trillion we'd save by adopting Medicare for all while guaranteeing every American quality health care. One could ask, would you use the savings? Would you use it to give, to forgive student loans and fund the Green New Deal, or just write refund checks to the American people? All of which are lovely ideas. Thanks. And see, if I have a little bit of inside knowledge here. It was, God, I'm trying to think how many years ago, maybe 2006. And I happened to be in attendance at a statewide labor meeting at which Joe Manchin showed up and spoke to the assembled faithful. And he knew that he had problems with labor back then because he hadn't exactly been a firebrand of the working man through his career. He was management through and through. But he sat there and told the assembled that, in point of fact, as long as they stuck with him, they, labor, would always have a seat at the table with him. And whenever I hear seat at the table, I always think of my dear friend Rick Smith, the single best pro-labor broadcaster in America today, maybe ever, who quipped, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. And so, with good reason, that labor organization sided with Joe Manchin because they preferred the idea of sitting at the table with him cutting off a little teeny tiny slices of the pie and handing it to them, as opposed to being in the middle of the table with an apple stuck in their mouth, figuratively speaking. But the reason I bring all of that up is because he had and has traded upon for a decade and a half or more now the fact that we're going broke. We can't afford to be giving people all of this here health care. And gosh, I just don't know what we're going to do. I mean, I don't want to have to sell my Harley Davidson and my houseboat. Because, you know, he's got this. But, yeah, he's somebody convinced him, and I'd say that the odds are about 99 to 1 that the convincing was done by the folks at ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, that, letting people go to the doctor when they're sick, even if they're old, that's unsustainable. We've got to do something about that. We need entitlement reform. And all that bilge that the right wing gold bugs constantly prate. So that's where that line, how can we pay for Medicare for all when we can't afford Medicare for some, comes from. It's going broke. Joe, I hate to break it to you, but buddy, we're a sovereign nation, and we're not on the gold standard, and we print our own money. Because, see, among other things, you've heard much about it by now, the $908 billion stimulus package that he and people like noted Republican moderate Susan Collins are backing. Did you know that within that $908 billion, there's not a single penny just to be sent out to people who have no goddamn money? Those $1,200 checks that the people got back in the spring to get them through till, you know, now? You know, looking back, it was kind of a slap in the face, wasn't it? But no, there's no stimulus checks for the American people. And what we're looking at now is the Congress has until Friday to act to extend unemployment benefits just a little while longer, assuming they're willing to act, which isn't so much about assuming they're willing to act as assuming the de facto tyrant of the United States, Mitch McConnell, is willing to act. Because ultimately, when the history of this four-year disaster is written, any historian who does not acknowledge that all the power really resided in the office of the Senate Majority Leader will have missed the boat entirely. And as quoted in Obama's book, Mitch McConnell looks up and says, "You seem to be operating under the impression that I care." I don't. I got mine. Fuck all y'all. I'm just going to go over here and take me a bottled in bond, pure Kentucky sour mash whiskey and stand next to the stars and bars and offer up a toast to heritage, not hate. But by God, Chinless Mitch is doing all he can to protect himself from the Rona. And the question, you know, how long must we be bedeviled by this meddlesome Kentucky colonel? I'm sure he is a Kentucky colonel, isn't he? Somebody's made him a Kentucky colonel. But that's you know, the lives of hundreds of millions of Americans are totally and entirely dependent upon the vicious whims of a wealthy, hateful, old, unrepentant, unreconstructed racist senator from Kentucky. I mean, I guess if you're a right winger in Kentucky, you feel kind of good about it. Hey, look at that. Look at that, Marbling. Our senator's ruling the whole country. Yeah, there's people going to go hungry in them liberal states like California and Oregon, Washington, New York, Massachusetts, Minnesota. And you know what? They deserve it for being liberals. Fuck them. Stick it to them again, Mitch, and put some stank on it. Yeah, I know. Mitch McConnell's threatening another government shutdown. Have you forgotten? No. And that's de facto what's going to happen if he remains majority leader once Joe Biden is president. And it scares the daylights out of me that Joe Biden's out there thinking, well, you know, we've got to form consensus here. We've got to do some give and take. We've got to do some Senate horse trading like back in the good old days. And all Mitch McConnell has to do is say, you seem to be operating under the impression that I care. What a monster. What a monster. Lou says, a discussion thought, if Moscow Mitch is in command of the Senate after the Georgia election, I assume he'll play cynical hardball akin to being a bully. If so, perhaps Biden should start shutting down military bases in Kentucky until Moscow Mitch decides to play a reasonable and gentleman's game of ball. Yeah, it might be nice. I mean, that's one way of maybe going about it, but I don't think that's, I mean, that's not who Joe Biden is. I think Joe Biden's going to try to win a PR war with someone who doesn't actually care. And therein lies the rub. Now, if by after the Georgia election you mean that Warnock and Ossoff both don't win, or that they both lose, yeah, that's how it is. That's how it is until 2022. We've already looked at the Senate map in 2022 and past programs. I don't know where you're going to pick up the Republican seats there. There's more of them up than there are Democrats, but they're all nice and safe. And so it's hard to see anything getting much better. Because when you're dealing with compromise and negotiation, both sides have to give things up. And Mitch McConnell has his heels dug in. And he doesn't want to do shit until he makes sure that none of his cronies or donors or the drinking buddies or what have you are going to have any legal liability out of all this. And the potential is there for the legal liabilities. One of the things that I've noticed in the course of my having to run around being the person who goes and does in this family is that, for the most part, people will put on a mask. And I'm talking about here in West Virginia. I don't know how it is anywhere else. But for the most part, people will put on a mask in, say, Walmart. They'll wear a mask in Food Lion. They'll wear a mask in Kroger. They even mostly wear them up to the Wiggling Pig. But it's the convenience stores. It's the Rippy Marts. And in this state, that mostly means places like Go-Mart, Little General, etc. And Dollar General. And Dollar Tree. Those are the places where masks are few and far between. Now, they've all got the sign right on the door, wear a mask. I was in the store like that earlier today. There was a sign very plainly displayed on the plexiglass window there that separated the clerk from the hoi polloi. And it said, no mask, no service. I looked over at the clerk, who was not wearing a mask at all. She wasn't even chin strapping it. She just wasn't wearing one. And the old coot on my side of the plexiglass, who wasn't wearing one. And just sardonically, although I don't know if you could tell because, you know, I had my mask on. Nice sign. Too bad it doesn't work. As it was, I got my little nicotine pouches and got the hell out of there. But that's all over this state. And I fear it's all over way too many states. And it's a matter of will. See, if you're a Republican attorney general, in most states you're going to say something like, well, I don't know if we can legally enforce them things. Whereas if you're an attorney general in a more enlightened state, you say, oh, we'll find out. And go ahead and prosecute. You know, because they found out in Australia and people take them seriously. And somehow or another, Australians have not stopped being free. COVID-19 in Australia, as a matter of fact, Robert in Australia with a dispatch. Australia has entered into 5 separate agreements for the supply of COVID-19 vaccines if they're proved to be safe and effective. There's no date for vaccinations in Australia at the moment. Western Australia is opening its hard border tomorrow. There's been no travel into or out of Western Australia for some months. Our billionaire, Clive Palmer, actually took Western Australia to court because they wouldn't let him in when he wanted to. You know, he's a billionaire. Law doesn't apply to him. He wasn't allowed in. New South Wales is dropping most COVID-19 restrictions this week. The media are calling it Freedom Day, which always reminds me of that episode of Futurama. I'll start wearing my mask and gloves when I go out until after everyone in Australia has been vaccinated. When it comes to COVID-19, trust no one. A limited amount of international travel has been opened up, and immediately someone screwed up nicely. Two Germans, a mother and her son, who should have gone into 14 days of hotel quarantine on arrival, were allowed to board an internal flight to Melbourne. So they got to walk through the airport breathing in and out. They've tested negative for COVID-19, but everyone on that flight has been ordered to quarantine. Australia has 28,000 confirmed cases total and 908 dead. And their numbers are as low as they are because of the precautions they have taken. We're heading into the bushfire season, and as far as I can tell, after last year's horror, the federal government has done nothing to prepare us for this year, except perhaps that the Prime Minister knows not to go on holidays to Hawaii this year. Robert, signed, Robert, remaining in isolation for the foreseeable future in Oz. Oh, wouldn't you? It would that we could get people in this country to take things. And you know, they've had their fair share of COVIDiots. They've had people pissing and moaning. But they're alive to piss and moan. We will, in the not-too-distant future, exceed the number of deaths from the Second World War. Probably this month alone, we will exceed the number of deaths from Vietnam. Hell's bells, we match the deaths from our misadventures in Afghanistan and Iraq about every couple of days. We did a 911 in one day last week. Do we learn? Oh, fuck no. Because freedom! Which brings me to another point. And by the way, thanks to those of you who have jumped in this evening helping with fundraising. We've got $240 to go to finish last Friday's and finish last week's funding. And $300 after that. So we're at $540. But thank you, Jeremy, and thank you, Elizabeth, and thank you to Jack in Shreveport for finishing up Thursday and getting us started on Friday. Much obliged. And God knows it needs to happen sooner rather than later. I can pay a desperately needed to pay bill if we can knock this out this evening, and that would be fantastic. What else? Steve in New York says, Iwanka, the only woman he's never divorced or cheated on. Well, different kind of algebra, I think, but yes, I get the point. You know, Flavio saw Joe Manchin on The View. It was awful. Why no pushback? That's what sort of devils me. Stephen New York saying, oh, dear, dear Bob, how can we afford Medicare for all when we have to fight wars and make weapons and sell the weapons? And yeah, this morning on my filthy morning habit, I noticed, and it seemed like it was really, really uncomfortably planned. They had the ambassador from Israel and the ambassador from, was it the UAE, on in split screen. And it was actually kind of nice because, what's his name? Richard Haass from the Council on Foreign Relations, might conservative for my taste, but he at least had the guts to call out the Israeli ambassador for trying to scuttle negotiations between the world and Iran before Joe Biden could even get into office. Again, the way they are and have been behaving with friends like these, you know, Israel, who needs enemies? What else? Now, hold on one Trump's demented, delusional, inept fool minute, Bob, says Scott in San Diego. You said he tweeted about the vaccine being held back on November 9th? Wait, didn't he say nobody would even be talking about COVID after Election Day, November 3rd? I'm so weary and wary when it comes to this circus peanut. Even when he's technically gone on January 20th, 2021, he still won't be gone in any useful way, like, you know, the fuck gone. No, and that's what... That's what kind of moved me to offer up a Moran Monday nomination for Nicole Wallace, saying that, well, of course we're not going to stop covering him. And if we don't, well, shame on the multimillionaires of the for-profit media. Meanwhile, Darlene sends the story along. Ted Cruz, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, volunteers to argue overturning the election before the U.S. Supreme Court. Darlene said, seriously, these assholes just won't quit the soft coup attempt. Well, no, because Nitwit Nero is still, to one degree or another, in power, and consequently, he must be... kowtowed to because he still has a voter base. He still has a constituency and will for the foreseeable future. In a statement to Fox News, Rafaelito said, as I said last week, the bitter division and acrimony we see across the nation needs resolution. I believe the Supreme Court has a responsibility to the American people to ensure within its powers that we're following the law and following the Constitution. If SCOTUS grants cert in the PA election case, I've told the petitioners I will stand ready to present the oral argument. Oh, shut up, Rafaelito. Oh, but we do have to be careful, because he is a master debater, no doubt about it. But the Supreme Court, yeah. According to a lawyer by the name of David Lurie, writing at the Daily Beast, he is what we can say, I think, definitively, he's scared. And rightfully so. Under the subhead Holy War, the Supreme Court's dangerous new crusade against science is just beginning. Even the Pope sees the problem with holding crowded services during a pandemic, but five justices now see a conspiracy against religion in any effort to respect science. And what set Mr. Lurie off was the recent ruling allowing churches and synagogues to perform super spreader events, and the Constitution and the people of the United States be damned, particularly the people. Among other things, if you go back and you study that godforsaken opinion, you'll find that the opinion, and remember, it was an unsigned opinion, but there seems to be a consensus agreement that it was most likely written by Amy COVID Barrett. That unsigned opinion accused Andrew Cuomo of being anti-Semitic for closing down Jewish houses of worship where the disease was being spread. And see, that's one, and that's a difficult issue, because I know exactly what Amy COVID Barrett was up to. There is a long and filthy tradition, particularly in Europe, but to a certain extent here as well, of referring to Jewish people as vermin. You know, little disease-spreading mammals like rats. I remember watching a documentary about the Holocaust and its origins, in which a school child said she remembered, or he remembered, sitting in class one day and hearing a little German child say, "Teacher, something stinks. I smell Jew." And that's gone on for 1,700 years, more or less. And they were accused of spreading the bubonic plague, of kidnapping babies and using Christian baby blood for their matzah. It's called the blood libel. Most of you know what it is. And so when a public health measure is taken, as was taken, well, not really taken, because New York had taken it off the table by the time the litigation got to the Supreme Court, but that didn't matter. A religious maniac like Amy COVID Barrett could take something like not spreading a deadly virus and twist it because of the sickness of her own cult mind into an allegation, a backhanded allegation of anti-Semitism, which it wasn't. Wouldn't you think that if there was even a whiff of anti-Semitism about it, that Elena Kagan and Stephen Breyer would have had their hair on fire running around the room? Because I would. Those two, I have no doubt, know what never again means. And so Amy COVID Barrett probably wrote the unsigned opinion, in which they put churches ahead of the public well-being, the public weal of the American people. And there's an argument to be made that they're going to do this with everything from public health to climate change. Lawyer Lurie wrote, the court's most reactionary justices bristled at the idea that they should defer to the public health decisions of elected officials, even, indeed, especially if those decisions are based on the advice of medical and scientific professionals. This is because they and others on the far right believe that scientific institutions and largely democratic public officials are engaged in a massive scheme to undermine traditional religion, and that the court must intervene as the protector of the faithful. You know, defender of the faith. That's only a little bit dangerous, that whole defender of the faith business. With Barrett joining the court, the newly empowered radical reactionaries have shifted to playing offense. Amy Covid Barrett went so far as to say, as to suggest that Cuomo gerrymandered his districts so as to make it easier to shut down and target synagogues. This is arrant, and that's A-R-R-A-N-T, horseshit. Beyond any shadow of a doubt. Cuomo couldn't have done that if he'd tried. The outcry would have been breathtaking. Lawyer Lurie also said, there's every reason to believe that their actions directed as much at weakening the power and authority of Democratic governors and soon a president to address the pandemic as they are at protecting the rights of the faithful. A majority of the members of the Supreme Court seem intent on conducting their own holy war on science and reason. Interesting that Mr. Lurie did not use the appropriate term, a crusade. You thought I was going to say jihad, didn't you? No. A crusade. Jihad was called only after crusade was called. A war for the cross. And you think Justice Handmaid wouldn't just jump out to be part, jump into that with feet first to be part of it? I mean, as long as her husband gave her permission. And as long as all the other men gave her permission. Now, she'd have to let Sammy Bad Breath and Clarence Pubes on the Coke Can Slappy Thomas and Brat lead. She might try to fit in there in front of Ann's boy Neil because, well, you know, he's an apostate because he's a whiskey Episcopal. Damn. Yeah. Hey, thanks to Steve and Miss Karen and little Cletus. We've gotten it down to 5:30. Thank you so much, all. I appreciate it. We appreciate it. Everybody who gets to listen to the program appreciates it. Ooh, that soothing GOP, says Scott in San Diego. Every one of them in both the House and Senate are the little cutouts on the pastel-shaded musical mobile that hangs above baby Huey Trump's widow quib. For God's sake, don't let it wind down, or he'll go, wah, wah, wah. Oh, yes, of course. Remember this, Bob, about that opinion, says Steve in New York. The Diocese of Brooklyn was also a party challenging that rule. This was not about anti-Jewish sentiment, but about large gatherings in hot neighborhoods leading to community spread. Right. But Justice Handmaid, because, you know, she's an originalist and a textualist, that is a fraud merchant, chose not to see so much of that. Yeah. Oh, and you remember the slogan that we have here at the Horn for the member of Congress who represents Northwest Alabama, my beloved home county, booming Madison County with all its tech industry, Morgan County, Limestone County. Mo Brooks, less brames. Yeah. That would be Congressman Mo Brooks of, I think, Alabama's 5th Congressional District. And he announced last week that, by God, he'd done figured out a way to make sure that Donald Trump stayed the president. Because they had a nice fair election in Alabama, a fair and clean and fraud-free election. And the way they knows it is because Donald Trump won, and so did most all of the Republicans. That's how you know if you got a clean election in Alabama. Obama. And so, citing Mo Brooks, did Mo Brooks, Les Brames. Mo Brooks, Les Brames. It's just like the old light beer commercial. Tastes great, less filling. Mo Brooks, Les Brames. Well, he wanted to use a law from the 1880s. That would let Congress throw out the results of the Electoral College because he didn't like the way that the majority of Americans voted.
Well, the fact of the matter is, if you don't count the votes in places like Oregon and Washington and California, and I ain't entirely sure them people's entirely Americans, even the white ones. I mean, you know how it is out there. Then it's clear that Donald Trump wins big. No, he didn't say that. I'm just saying what I think he thought he said. Or what I think he thought. Never mind the saying.
Well, what he wants to do is have a joint, that when they have the joint session to certify the results, they'd suspend it, and then each house would go back and they'd debate and vote on the objection that he, Mo Brooks, Les Brames, had made. The problem is he's got to have a Republican senator by his side. Well, who does he not have? Let's see. John Cornholio, the second in command in the Senate behind the tyrant Mitch McConnell, has said, nobody likes to lose, but we have to respect the judgment of the American people, the voters. So I don't support, I don't endorse, I don't really like just making a show just to make a show. And that's, remember, he chucked Donald Trump under the bus a couple of weeks before the election when it looked like that Donald Trump might take him down with, and M.J. Hager might wind up being a senator. Mike Brown of Indiana said, I think that December 14th is a critical date. If there's not enough other stuff in place, I doubt that would be a maneuver that would seem to work. On the other hand, since I mentioned him a minute ago, thanks to Darlene reminding me, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America and junior senator from the state of Texas, said, we need to wait for the pending litigation to be concluded. John Thune of South Dakota said, I doubt that goes anywhere. This is a process that's well established. Roy Blunt, another Republican from Missouri, said, you have to have senators join them, and we saw House members object 4 years ago, and no senator stood up and objected. Meanwhile, making a speech on the floor of the House, Mo Brooks, Les Brames, said, No one knows how massive the illegal alien voting block is or how many voted in 2020. Hundreds of thousands? Almost certainly. Millions? Very likely. By the way, anyone wondering where he got those numbers, he found them floating around in the thin gray settlings that slosh about between his ears and pass for brains. But what we do know for sure is that the illegal alien voting bloc was large enough and critical enough to win in the presidential race that at the October 22nd presidential debate, Joe Biden openly and publicly solicited their illegal votes by promising within 100 days, I'm going to send to the new United States Congress a pathway to citizenship for over 11 million undocumented people. Yeah, some of them who aren't even old enough or tall enough, you know, just, you know, babies, if they're not in cages, to vote. And oddly enough, the court system, not Joe Biden, shot nitwit Nero down the other day, insisting that the federal government and the executive branch reopen applications for DACA so that the Dreamers can have a fighting chance. How bad is it for Mo Brooks, Les Brames? Well, even Tommy Tuberville, the recently elected junior senator from Alabama, said, he said nothing because he's remained quite quiet, being how the last time he opened his mouth, he had the United States fighting on the same side as the Nazis in World War II. God, truly there's a breathtaking degree of stupidity in this country. And all too many of them are sent to Congress by breathtakingly stupid people in the districts. I know a lot of nice, wonderful folks in Mo Brooks's district, none of whom voted for him. But they were outnumbered. Must be nice, however, if you got a good hustle, like, say, an anti-LGBTQ plus private school in Northern Virginia, Springfield, to be precise. That's where the Emmanuel Christian private school is. They don't allow no LGBTQ teachers nor students because, quote, homosexual acts and lifestyles are clearly perversions and reprehensible in the sight of God. Mm-hmm. This is also where Mother Pence teaches art, you know. Karen, the original Karen, the Karen of Karens. I guess she'll have to find an LGBTQ hating private school in Talibandiana to teach at after January the 20th. Lucky for her, she probably won't have to look very far. But nonetheless, the Emmanuel Christian Private School got $725,000 of your money in the Paycheck Protection Program.
Mm-hmm.
Presumably, some of that went to pay Karen Pence. Kyle Herrig is president of the government watchdog group Accountable, Accountable.us. In a statement to the Washington Blade, Kyle Herrig said, "It is shameful that an institution that discriminates against LGBT Americans received nearly $1 million in taxpayer funds. This money was meant to help mom-and-pop small businesses meet payroll and keep the lights on. Instead, the wealthy and well-connected cashed in." Remember, Kelly, Attila the Hun Loeffler, after a big stock dump and she picked up a new jet. I don't mean the magazine of Black Life and Culture either. I mean a freaking twin engine private jet. But there's another, there's another one of those reminders. For some reason or another, there was no prohibition on those stimulus funds being given to hate groups like the Emmanuel Christian School of Springfield, Virginia. Because that was one of those necessary compromises, I suppose, in order to get the original stimulus put through. January 20th cannot get here quickly enough. Do we agree on that? Yeah. As to illegals voting, Stephen New York says, "I can tell you this, I have a friend who is a DACA person. There's not a snowball's chance in hell he would ever attempt to vote to risk being sent to detention and then sent back to Mexico, from whence his parents brought him when he was 4 years old. He's now nearly 30. For his parents to risk such a thing is even more unthinkable." Yeah, but see, they don't live in the thin gray settlings that slosh around between Mo Brooks, Les Brames' ears, and Pass for Brains like the imaginary ones do. Yeah. "Here's one reason that Democrats lose," says Lee in New York. "They don't remind everyone how the Republicans hurt all people. The longest government shutdown is under Donald Trump. Did the Democrats say anything during the election? I don't remember anyone reminding the electorate." Probably not, Lee, because the list was too damned long at that point. There's just so much that you can fit into an entire campaign season, even if that campaign season is 4 years long. I mean, we can barely keep up here with the day-to-day. I So we are well past the halfway point of the program. And let's check in. Let's check in with Todd. Hey, Todd.
Hey, Bob.
Thanks for the help, man.
How are you today? Huh? Oh, shoot. You know.
Yeah, I was trying to join you in with Scott so that we could have another one of those little round tables, but for some reason or another, when I went to merge the calls, it just took yours. So we'll go to Scott next. That's okay. Go ahead.
I know what happened. It's Scott Spoon. He was making his Sanka, and it was just
it probably was.
You know, I thought that was funny, but
that is funny. That is funny. That's what happens when you jingle your spoon against your coffee cup.
It was loud for a few nights. We all love Scott, though. Scott's a natural-born radio person. But this is – all right, you got to explain to me again why we deserve to vote collectively on a federal level. Because I think – I'm going to state my argument here. Been thinking about this a little bit. There's a whole lot of baskets that have that have a confluence. You got the one basket, you know, most of our senators, maybe not representatives, but senators, they're old people.
That's what Senate means.
Right. And they're they're post-GUI, post-graphic user interface type people. They're not computer folks. They don't really pay attention to URLs, and they're not that savvy. That's what they have assistance for. So, and the reason I'm saying is, sorry, let me not go too far forward. So they're not that savvy with, you know, on the internet. They can't discern what's fact, what's fiction, what's this, what's that. They don't know. No fault of their own, maybe. And then, of course, you know, human nature is that you gravitate towards stuff that confirms your belief system, you know. We've all learned that. So we have people in Congress who follow Q. And that's evidence right there. But okay, what is behind that? Like, why do they believe that? Don't they look at the URLs? Don't they see some of the shits from Poland and these, you know, weird Eastern Bloc countries and, you know, elsewhere? And it gets harder. Even if you're savvy, you have to really look at it. It's like, oh, this font doesn't match. And, no, this is – no. And people are getting their news from Facebook still. So when I say that we should not be able to vote federally, collectively on the federal level, maybe until we have some type of programs in schools where we teach people how to be better consumers of information. You know, and it makes me go back to early on when I was listening to Dr. O'Brien and, you know, the debate between him. You know, remember, that was the debate. You can express it better than I can, but you know exactly what I'm talking about, right?
Yes, I do.
And this is exactly what they meant. Because remember, back then in the 1700s, there were lots of newspapers, but a lot of it was yellow journalism. You know, it was kind of what we have on the internet, except it was localized. Now you had some what they called national stuff, but I mean, my God, it took a while to get where, you know, to get to you, to get to a person. So we had this degrading of what's going on, and then when you do Winamp, which is back up and running now. Alex Jones is number one. He is consistently number one.
Oh, I know. And over on TuneIn, a lot of evenings, the number one trending program there is Fox and Cucky Tucky.
I don't know the second one. Who?
Cucky Tucky. Tucker Carlson.
What is that?
Tucker Carlson. Cucky Tucky.
Okay. I mean, you know, it just lies. So, right. So, I don't know that we're qualified to vote on the federal level anymore. I just don't see how this is.
Well, you know, what you're going back to is the debate in the Constitutional Convention as to what would constitute democracy. Because in the Federalist Papers, Madison finally just says, listen, whatever we do, we're going to call it democracy, okay? Whether it is or not, that's what we're going to call it. And we're all going to agree to call it that, right? Right. And so you would have, and also by the same token, this is why I coined the phrase a long time ago, and I hang on to it like a junkyard dog with an old bone. In the United States of America, democracy is far more aspirational than operational. It's something we think we might like to have someday, but we're not very good at it yet. More aspirational than operational. And so the framers say, all right, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to have direct elect, you know, what people want to do on their state level governments and their town councils and borough boards and whatnot. That's on the state level, and federal government ain't got no business in that. But on the federal level, what we're going to do is we're going to have the direct democratic election of the members of the House of Representatives. Yes, sirree, we sure are. The people are going to vote for the members of the House. They're going to vote directly. I mean, bear in mind, we're talking about, when we say the people are going to vote, we're talking about white people. We're not even really talking about white people. We're talking about white men. And we're not even just talking about all the white men. We're talking about the white men who own a certain amount of property. I mean, you know, you can't own a pot and a window to a pot full of piss and a window to point it out of and think you're going to run around voting. You're going to have to be of some worth, because that, you know, having some money is how we're going to know in America that you're worth trusting with the vote.
Well,
and you know, if your wealth, if your worth happens to be invested in thinking that you own other human beings, we're going to count that. That'll count. So we're going to have democracy in the House of Representatives. Now, over in the Senate, it's going to be a different story, because that's where the wise people are. That's where the wise white men are supposed to reside. And they're not going to be getting all up in each other's faces and beating on each other with shillelaghs and sticks and pulling out guns and knives and whatnot like they're going to do in the House, because them fuckers are going to be crazy because they've been elected by in a democracy. Now, in the Senate, it's going to be staid and calm and collected, because we ain't going to let the hoi polloi vote for no senators. That's going to either be selected by the legislature, or by the legislature and the governor, or by the governor.
Right.
But it's going to be up to the states, because we're the federal government and we ain't got no business in that. And if the federal government starts getting too pushy, Thomas Jefferson will probably go, run around in his bathrobe and his slippers and cry some more. And then we got down to the presidency. Well, can we have some democracy for the presidency, Mr. Madison? Oh, fuck no. You kidding me? No, I've been talking to my buddy Al over here, and Al says that he wants himself a electoral college. He done been to college. He went to Columbia because he couldn't beat Aaron Burr at Princeton. But never mind that. No, we're definitely not gonna let the hoi polloi vote for the president. And the funny thing, Todd, out of all of this, so you get. You get an expansion of the franchise for a brief period after the Civil War. Well, no, okay. So some of the property requirements go away in the early 19th century. Then, after the Civil War, for a brief period of time, freed black men get to vote for a little bit, but we know what happened to that. Oh, hello, Mr. Crow. Meanwhile, the white women are out there going, wait a minute! And so they get to vote 100 years ago. Then you get the Civil Rights Movement. And then after we started shipping kids off to get butchered in the swamps and jungles and hills and whatnot of Vietnam, it suddenly dawned on somebody that, you know, if these kids, if we can send these people off to die in a futile, stupid war in Southeast Asia and they can't even vote, well, that's got to change. And so that changed. An 18-year-old's got the vote. And along the way, we decided that we would amend the Constitution so that the senators would be directly elected. But the one thing, and we've talked about this before, the one thing that even though as far back as Andrew fucking Jackson, he was saying, you know, we really ought to do something about the Electoral College. We never, ever, ever did. And it and when the Electoral College has won out over the popular vote in this country, nothing good has ever come of it. Rutherford B. Hayes became the president of the United States in a negotiated settlement of a presidential election against Samuel Tilden, and the negotiation on that was that Rutherford B. Hayes would actively pull federal troops out of the South and quit trying to enforce the 13th fucking amendment and the 14th fucking amendment, and that's how we got Mr. Crow. So that's one. In 2000, George Bush wins the Electoral College by hook or by crook over Al Gore, who won the popular vote, and we get two needless wars and 9/11 and a permanent change to the so-called national security state. And then 16 years later, well, we got this. And we've got a plague that probably by the time Joe Biden is inaugurated will have killed 500,000 Americans. Nothing good has ever come of the Electoral College choosing the president against the will of the people. And yet I don't hear anybody coming into this new Congress saying, you know what, I don't know what the rest of you are going to do, but I am going to introduce a constitutional amendment to get the hell rid of the Electoral College. Have you?
Wow.
Have you?
No, but you know, you laid out a very succinct, I mean, that was as succinct as I've heard. And to end it. And that argument in that way that you made it, I mean, come on, right? What is wrong? Come on, people. They need to step up. I mean, we shout, yell, you know, everything.
Yout, let it all out. These are the things we can do without Electoral College. Come on. No, sorry.
Come
you
on.
Know, when the fundraising goal's at $530, I'm not compelled not to sing anymore. Yout.
Oh, remember those words, shall and will. Anyway. So, right, well, you want to go down that road. Right. So, I think, though, it's really sad. You still see people are still learning that the Electoral College, what it means. In other words, you still have a whole lot of people thinking it's still one person with a vote. Like you ask them on the street, oh, my vote. They don't get it. But now more people are getting it. But we've forgotten the last, you know, that they are like, they can function as human resources. You know, they could have said at the last minute, you know, I'm sorry, this is just not going to be a good fit. Yes, you won the popular vote. Yes, you got X amount of Electoral College votes. You got 270. However, in light of your past history and your present history, recent history of your behavior verbally and otherwise, you know, this is just not going to work out. And we're sorry, but you may apply again. You can run again, but not this. No, this is done. They didn't do that.
Nope. Nope.
And look at the misery. Look at the misery now. Look at the misery of the world. Not just us. It's the world.
Look at the price.
So maybe, you know, I don't know. Maybe we need to start a movement with the electorate. Maybe because we can have a coalition. There are Republicans out there who see that this electoral college isn't working. Maybe. You know. I don't know. What do you think?
The Electoral College is just such a godforsaken anachronism. I mean, we might as well have a constitutional provision that says that all presidents must wear powdered wigs. They're the same thing. They have no modern relevance, no modern meaning. They're only they are relevant only insofar as they are the product of a process of nearly a quarter of a millennium ago. I mean, I know some of the argument. Well, you know, that means the small states will never be important again.
Right.
Is that such a bad thing, Todd? If it's true, and it isn't. There are places that are still going to be bellwethers, even if they're not battlegrounds. You know, you learn that, you know, Ohio has a role to play because sometimes it fucks up and does the right thing and votes Democratic. Not very often, but it does.
Well, you read my mind with that argument. Right. But see,
you know, West Virginia was important once.
Uh-huh.
We gave John Kennedy the Democratic nomination in 1960. That's the closest relevant West Virginia's ever been. Now, coulda, shoulda, woulda, had we voted for Al Gore in 2000, Florida wouldn't have mattered. But Alabama's never going to matter. Unless it's some weird one-off, like Republicans nominating a mall perv to run for the Republican for their ballot position in a Senate race, I love Hawaii. Hawaii's never going to matter. No, the framers certainly didn't intend for any one state or handful of states. Remember, there were only 13. And then, you know, fairly quickly, 15. But they never intended for one state to be more important than another in terms of presidential electoral politics. That was not the purpose in creating the Electoral College. The purpose in creating the Electoral College was to keep the slave owner states happy and get the document ratified, period.
Right.
End of discussion.
It was a hurry-up, stop-gap measure. It was a hurry-up to say, look, we have to, Britain's breathing, we have to do this, Britain's breathing down our neck. We have to do this. We got to get unified here. This is what it's going to take to get these folks on board. But this is the problem now that I see, because I follow a lot of lectures. You know, I attend a lot of lectures about new historians. And, you know, there's a risk. Because people, you know, well, I'm not a historian, but I'm saying people have in their minds their arguments. And on one side, you never hear from certain folks, noted historians, that the Electoral College is rooted in slavery, in that you wanted to count people who really didn't count. They can't vote. They can't do shit but work and die. But you want to count them.
for purposes of determining how many members of the House a state will have.
Right. You want to count a non-entity to be an entity.
Well, look, I mean, it was the Three-Fifths Compromise was actually a form of bigotry against the non-slave states. And that's why why there was so much bitterness and division over it from jump. The Three-Fifths Compromise said we are going to give, you know, only white men are going to be able to vote, but we're going to count for population purposes. We're going to count slaves as three-fifths of a human being, so that means that you are going to have a population, an artificial population advantage against states that don't have slaves. And from that moment forward, the slave states lorded it over the non-slave states. And there are still variations of that going on. Let's ask Dr. Google here real quick, just so I can be somewhat accurate. Population
of ruled. Look, the South has ruled. They have ruled us forever.
The United States of America is ruled by. Well, here, let's drill this down a little bit further. How did this turn out? Oh, bastard. Not you.
No, I know. I understand.
Sometimes.
What bothers me, we don't hear enough people bringing up both sides of this argument. You don't hear the other side, even respectable historians. You don't hear them say, well, it's just really.
I heard a lawyer and a historian from the Ohio State University say, undeniably, the origins of the Electoral College were racist. I heard him say that once. So here we go. I wanted to work this out down to the numbers. Let's see. Now this is going to be kind of raw because we're going to pretend that everybody in that state voted, which obviously didn't happen. This could be sorted out if we had the time, but I'm doing it on the fly. So let's say there are. Oh, I don't know. For all intents, let's just call it 2 million. Okay, 2 million. So, 2 times.
Uh-oh, you
point five eight equals one. So, in essence, here's what I was going for. The entire United States of America are ruled by 1.16 million people. Let that set. I mean, that's more pernicious than counting the population of South Carolina versus, say, the population of Massachusetts in 1787.
Are we like 200, almost 300 million people now? 2.7?
350 million, Todd.
Oh, 350. Jesus. Okay. Well, that's pathetic.
Do you know who those 1.16 million people are?
Who are they?
They are 1.16 million mostly white people in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. And because our Constitution is so buggered, 1.16 million mostly white people in Kentucky rule the entire nation through Mitch McConnell.
Well, that's because he has excellent parliamentarians around him, and he plays hardball. He plays for keeps, and that's what he does.
Well, I would say it more. I would say it shorter. That's because he is a ruthless practitioner of power politics.
Have you seen that interview where they interviewed people who knew him when he was younger, when he ran for like class president and all that? He did. He was dirty politics.
Yeah, total asshole.
So this is nothing new with him.
The Commonwealth of Kentucky is the 26th most populous state in the Union. There are 25 states with more people in them. Just let that sink in.
Oh.
And so he beat Amy McGrath 58% to basically, again, we're just rounding things here, 42%. So that means the 58% of the people who went out and voted in on November the 3rd rule the United States of America. And you know what? If I was a Kentuckian and I realized that, I'd want to maintain my power too. He declares what will and will not become a law.
Well, exactly.
Americans are going hungry this holiday season, losing their homes. Many of them have already lost their jobs. Businesses are going under. The economy is slowing. And Mitch McConnell's response is, you seem to be under the impression that I care. I'm just going to be over here standing by the stars and bars drinking some bottled in bond. Cheers.
But see, that's because people are uninformed or ill-informed, and they're just mired in simpletonry, and they don't get it. You know, they just don't get it. I mean, maybe they like the outcome, but I think if they understood how it transpires, maybe they wouldn't.
I think it's purely transactional, Todd. You know, some out of work coal miner in eastern Kentucky might be out of work, might not know where the next meal's coming from, but by God, Mitch McConnell's gonna stick it to them liberals in California. Fuck 'em.
Okay, that's a good segue. What I want to say now, I'm gonna play Donnie Deutsch. You know, more.
Oh no.
Trump's friend. Now he's an ad guy, right? And you know, to be
he's a marketing genius.
Right. Well, you have to know. You have to have a little. You have to understand the human psyche a little bit to be successful in that. You know, that's where industrial psychologists come in. But I could make an. I'm thinking the good ad campaign for this would be: don't you want your vote to count? Don't you want to be heard? One person, one vote. Let's do away with the Electoral College. One person, one vote. That's a 15-second spot.
Maybe 10. One person, one Maybe vote, 10. End the Electoral College. Yeah, I think that's a 5-second ad.
Saturate that. Because we know repetition works.
But see, you know what else America knows, and we talk about these things. We are who we are on this side, Todd. But the fact of the matter is, the other side knows this too. And the Republican Party knows that if you get rid of the Electoral College, that would mean that every Republican presidential candidate would have to campaign all over the country, and that there's a whole bunch of the country that is never, ever, 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 ever going to vote and give a majority of their votes to a goddamn Republican. Not now, not after what they've become, not after George W. not after the racism of Ronald Reagan and the patricianism of George H.W. Bush and the bloody incompetence of George W. Bush. And now the rise of the Klan and the Nazis and shit that now form the base of the Republican Party, they can't win without the Electoral College. It's the same reason that that Mitch McConnell says that Puerto Rico and D.C. will become states over his dead body.
Right.
Because the Senate will never fall into Republican hands again, and I'm hesitant about using that magic word never, but I think you understand why I say what I say.
Right, I do.
So
they know that.
So, you know, that informs them. They know who they are. More than we know who they are, they know who they are. They are the white party. They are the white power party. They are the Klan party, the neo-Nazi party. Remember that broadcast that Milo Yiannopoulos and Steve Bannon were on before the 2016 election? Because I can't forget it.
Oh, God.
When they said that white nationalists comprise a majority of the GOP base, and that was before Donald Trump was elected? Well, if that was what it was in 2016, what is it now? It hasn't become less than by any stretch of the imagination.
Well, Donnie Deutsch this morning stated the obvious, you know, things that everybody who listens to this, your program, we already know. You know, all those people are out there at that Trump rally in Georgia with no masks on and all agitated and hyped up. You know, because for whatever reason, there's a lot of white folks who are scared and apprehensive because they see the demographics changing. And, you know, for a lot of reasons, they have fears. You know, the fear of the unknown. That you know, anybody's fears, that's all, you know, it's true. Because if you're scared, you're scared. Doesn't matter if we think it's stupid, but they're scared. And, you know, it's too fucking bad. Sorry. You know, I'm sorry you're scared. You know, just because you're scared of the roller coaster, you know, don't make roller coasters illegal. Don't ride the roller coaster. Stay away from the roller coaster. Because the roller coaster's there. You know, just don't get on it. You know, this is, and next year it'll be a space age roller coaster because, you know, shit moves on. You know, you can't keep your son from sleeping with that woman. And they had babies. And, well, you know, we know what happens, though. You know, it's nobody's fault. It's just the way it is. It's life. So there's a whole lot of shit going on at once. You know, folks are upset. You know, and it's unfortunate that we had this miscreant in charge who is just, he was like napalm. This is not going away. Napalm, it saturates, and then it's easy to ignite later on. It's out there. He's setting fire to the country before he leaves. So now we got this Nazi problem. And this is a tangent, but it's important. What in the fuck? He is moving people in these positions. Not only he can't be trusted with secrets, because he's already given away secrets in plain day where they had to, like, retroactively declassify things because he just blurted it out and showed pictures. Ratliff is unqualified to be doing what he's doing. But now you got Lewandowski, the fucking thuggish cop.
Yeah, at the Pentagon.
The Pentagon?
Oh, I got a good one. I got a good one for you. you're going to love this one. It's time to talk about, and I don't remember mentioning her, but I remember reading of her, a woman by the name of Dr. Jane Orient, O-R-I-E-N-T. Now, Dr. Jane Orient is the executive director, which means wingnut welfare in this case, for the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. Sounds terribly official, doesn't it? Well, it's just a group of right-wing quacks. And their primary purpose is to advocate against government involvement in health care. Okay? So let's see. What has the American Association of American Physicians and Surgeons grunted in the past? Well, being gay shortens your life expectancy. HIV doesn't cause AIDS. Hydroxychloroquine cures COVID. that's just a few of the things. And she says, you know, the vaccines may not work, especially not COVID vaccines. Okay, so she's a crank. She's just another wingnut welfare crank, except for the fact that the Senate committee the Homeland Security Committee is going to have a hearing. And they have invited, or I should say, Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin, he works in the lumber mill there, has invited her to testify before a subcommittee of the Senate Homeland Security Committee on how we deal with COVID going forward. Because the reason she wants to testify before the committee, Todd, and you might want to get a hockey puck and a little duct tape,
I'm concerned that Americans are not getting information about their alternatives for treatment.
Silly woman.
Alternatives for treatment. What? Maybe a good bloodletting? An exorcism, perhaps?
You know, this is her. First of all, her name that sounds suspect. Her name doesn't. That sounds like some type of made-up name. I'm sorry. That doesn't even. Yeah, come on. This is bullshit. This is bullshit. So, I guess the way we started our conversation, like, you know, we have. What are we going to do? 70 million people, aside from boxcars, which is probably not feasible and not nice. I have to say, I really appreciate you honing in on the deprogramming. That's probably the best way to deal with these people.
I just don't know how you do that with, you know, people in their millions.
Well, It's a daunting task, but you know, come on, this is nonsense. We cannot let people keep going forward with this nonsense. You know, it started off, well, it didn't start off, but you know, Joe the Plumber, anti-intellectualism. No, what do you know? We need to shake up Washington. They don't know anything. They're bureaucrats. Well, you know, who do you think gets that check processed for you, for your disability and all that other stuff? You know, we're in a bad way.
Oh, I noticed. I noticed this morning on my filthy morning habit that they finally caught up on another aspect of it, a comparison between George Wallace and Donald Trump. Damn, we've been doing that for how? We've been talking about that for how long over here, Todd?
Yeah, they need to get in line. Come on. Yeah, I heard that. I did. I was like, oh, that's passé now. I'm like, what? Yeah, 3 or 4 years ago. You know. And once again, the rise of the Nazis. It's the first episode on PBS when they describe how Hitler starts to assemble power. It's just like they're talking about Trump. As soon as he assumes power, oh, he's disinterested in everyday affairs. And they show him just sitting around, you know. Of course, Hitler's reading the paper, but of course Trump can't read. He just looks at the headline. And, you know, it's just, it's uncanny. It is just too fucking much. And, you know, I don't know. Our law enforcement has been corrupted. Our medical people. You got nurses now, and I told you this. You had that woman come out in the news the other day, but I told you from around here. You know.
Oh yeah.
Like, you know, which is heavily Republican. You know, nurses, man, they're supposed to know better. Why are we talking about masks? I mean, why is it even a fucking issue? Number one, that shit was figured out before the electron microscope 110 years ago. Number two, in Asia, in ever since Hiroshima, and probably before in Asia, they have been wearing masks. They don't go out when they're sick, number one. Number two, if they are sick, they definitely wear a mask. And they were wearing masks right after, if you remember those videotapes, when they were fumigating outside, you know, outside.
Well, and you know, and some of these mask holes are of a certain age. And I know they watched MASH, and you know, Hawkeye and Trapper never keeled over with a mask on after, you know, 17 hours of meatball surgery. Somebody'd come over and mop their brows once in a while, but they didn't pass out from wearing a mask. I mean, I realize that's a little bit silly, but you know. And yet, and yet here you go. I mean, there's this one little clip out of the Rudy's fraud hearing, you know, the one he farted during. And one of his witnesses there, he and Jenna Ellis were 4 hours or more without a mask in that hearing room in Michigan, and now the legislatures of both Michigan and Arizona have had to shut down business because he may have been a one-man super spreader.
I've been waiting to hear something about that. Now, okay. Is that because people are sick or is it preempted?
It's prophylactic. Okay. Arizona Senate and House Sunday are closing for a week out of an abundance of caution for recent cases and concerns relating to COVID-19. And no voting will take place and attendance will not be taken in the Michigan House of Representatives. Multiple representatives have requested time to receive results from one recent COVID-19 test before returning to session out of an abundance of caution, that again in Michigan. Because, well, these hearings, such hearings, were called by maggot Republicans who all spent the day swanning around and schmoozing with Rudy Giuliani. So I got this clip, and you're going to love it.
Ms. Jacob?
Yes.
I don't want you to do this if you feel uncomfortable, but would you be comfortable taking your mask off so that people could hear you more clearly?
Can you hear me now?
Can everyone hear it clearly?
We can hear it. We can hear you.
Okay.
Yeah, he was trying to get her to take her mask off, and she didn't want to take her mask off.
Wait a minute. Did I just hear what I thought I fucking heard? Did he just ask that woman, like, he's trying to spread his shit?
Just do it again. Just in case.
Ms. Jacob?
Yes.
I don't want you to do this if you feel uncomfortable, but would you be comfortable taking your mask off so that people could hear you more clearly?
Can you hear me now?
Can everyone hear it clearly?
We can hear it. We can hear you.
Okay.
It was bad optics for her to be wearing a mask.
Oh, okay. That is bull. I hate that shit. You know, he's so evil. But here's the other thing. I'm sorry. I mean, come on. I'm not sorry. That's a stupid phrase. This is 2020. There is no fucking way. This is a bunch of bullshit. Well, I can't hear you because you have a mask on. Everybody has Bluetooth. You can get this little clip-on microphone, clip it to the side of that damn mask, and everyone can hear you clearly. Am I bullshitting here?
No.
So
She was sitting there with her mouth probably not 6 inches away from a microphone attached to a public address system.
Yeah. See, these people are just playing games. Because I know it, when I'm at work, if somebody can't hear me, I say, well, can you hear me? Am I loud enough? Because sometimes I get, people will ask me to speak. They'll just come in and they're like, oh, get it, you know, out of nowhere. And you just modulate your voice, whatever you have to do. But when you have, you know, the technology now is such that it's not an issue. It's really not an issue. And as a matter of fact, who did that? Jamie Raskin does that. I've seen Beto do it, you know, with the clip of a microphone right on your mask. And it's like clear as day. Scanlon does it. You know, these people, I hate that this that medical conditions, medical science has gotten politicized. And that's what I'm saying, man. We've been dumbed down so quickly, this bullshit. And it's so sad. It's so sad. I would have donated more, but I'm making this car payment. But let me say this thing about
No, man. No, thank you so much.
This shit is really strange. I get better, and it's funny. I didn't want to say anything until I had a couple that came in at work, and they had the same color car, the same car I had. And I said, oh, is that your car out there? And I didn't say I had the same one. I just let them talk. I wanted to ask them questions first. So I said, well, what's your mileage like? They got the exact same mileage in the city and exurbs that I get. And it's a little less on the highway for some reason. I don't know why. But, you know, you can get, you look at the graphs and the charts and everything on the readout. Basically, it's just like the video game. Once again, I got to plug Electronic Arts, man, Real Racing Sports, you know, Real Racing 3. These cars, they're set up like the real car. It's just uncanny. So when you're driving a hybrid, I guess, or an electric vehicle, you want to get up to sort of a hybrid probably. You want to get up to speed, and then you kind of coast and you just feather the accelerator. And you see that meter, and it tops out at 60 or more.
Yeah.
I can get 51 miles per gallon in town. And that's doing no more than between, 0 miles to probably 45 or 50. There's a sweet spot. Now, over 60, 65, the miles drops. But in town, and you know, you got three buttons. There's eco, normal, and sport. And eco's probably when you're on the freeway, I suppose, in traffic. You know, stop and go, like on the beltway outside of D.C. That would be eco. The normals, I guess, I don't know. But I just leave it in sport. Like, I don't know, I'm in this chat room, or whatever. Not in the chat room, but listening. You know, reading what people have been saying. And I was like, well, let me try that. And so it definitely, I mean, come on, getting 50-some miles to the gallon in the city with a full-size car?
Wow. I mean, I know a guy who has a Toyota RAV4 hybrid, and even that vehicle, for the size that it is, he says he gets just regular driving, he gets 45 miles a gallon.
See? I can't go back, man. If I'm still around, I'm on a pickup truck, you know, a hybrid pickup. It's just, it makes you conscious of how you're burning your fuel, too. I mean, if you care about it. You don't have to care, but, you know. And it's got the giddy up when you need it. It's amazing. It's really something. It can only cook a pizza.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, you just have that's extra. You have to factory order for the pizza oven.
But your turkey was something, huh?
Oh man, that was so good. I want to do another one. More dressing, but I fear the weather is mostly gone for a few months now.
Oh, Is it like, yo, are you getting, it's cold, man. And, oh, you said you had snow shower. It's cold and wet here. It's cold and rainy and wet.
Well, what passes for cold and rainy and wet where you are? I mean, that's. Because we've got a low of 20. We got a high. We had a high of 32 today and a low of 25. And it's just going to keep snowing for the next hour.
Damn. Hey. At least you don't have Frontier.
Well, no, but we've been getting Shentel burps, and that's not much better. Todd, you have yourself a good evening, my friend.
All right.
You take care. We'll talk soon. Bye now.
Okay.
So, anyway, the program is about 30 minutes away from being over, and we are at 530 bucks. That 530 bucks, well, if we can raise 230 bucks, we will be done fundraising with last week. If we could get done with fundraising for last week, that would be fan-freaking-tastic. If anybody wants to jump in, you know, the button's there at headon.live right there on the main page. And by the way, let's, Sparky sent this along. Let's check in with Jenna Ellis. Now, Jenna talks to God and sweet fake baby Jesus all the time. And she knows what America needs. America needs to have its will overturned. America needs to have its vote overturned. America needs four more years of this goddamn disastrous nightmare.
False corrupt results.
Jenna, I just got a minute to go. I've noticed that you're posting more and more scripture on Twitter lately. It seems like the battle, the mocking, all of the things that you're going through, of course, Rudy Giuliani now having COVID-19, pretty tough. I'm curious how you're holding up, how you maintain this level of optimism.
I appreciate that, Charles. And, you know, my life is in service and honor to the Lord Jesus Christ. And so whatever anybody else says really doesn't bother me. I hope that I can be a light and inspiration to everyone else that.
Wait a minute. I mean, I know Jesus loves the little children and all of that. But she lives her life in service to Jesus Christ. I'm guessing she's never found that verse in there, never run across it about how you can a woman cannot serve two masters. Because I don't think you can serve Donald Trump and call yourself a Christian. As a recovering Southern Baptist, I can say with absolute certainty that you cannot serve Donald Trump and call yourself a Christian. You cannot serve a servant of Satan and call yourself a Christian. No.
Anybody else says really doesn't bother me. I hope that I can be a light and inspiration to everyone else that no matter what anyone says about you, it's all about just who you are as a person made in the image of God and in Christ. And that's ultimately at the end of the day, as long as I know that I'm pursuing truth and I'm doing the right thing for God and my country, that's all that matters. So that's what gives me my optimism and my hope. I appreciate you asking that.
All right, Jenna, thank you very much. We'll talk to you again real soon.
No, well, I'm sure they will over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, but the fact of the matter is that's how you start the camps, you know, with a sign that says Gott mit uns. And Jenna Ellis apparently has no problem with that whatsoever. Question coming in from John in PA. I wanted to ask what happens if Addison McConnell decides to block the certification of the electoral votes in the Senate. And about America's asshole asking that lady to take her mask off, I think it might be sexual. My sister says creeps at the restaurant she works at will say things like, come on, honey, why don't you pull that mask down? I want to see your purty mouth. Sure do got a purty mouth. Ding, 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 ding. Oi. That's creepy. That's real creepy. And that's probably part of it. I mean, because, well, we've all seen Borat 2, haven't we? But insofar as it's a constitutional function that doesn't have any wiggle room to it, I don't think Mitch McConnell can stop the certification process, and I don't know that he would necessarily want to. I think he has more fun fucking America when there's a Democrat in the White House. Because remember, Joe Biden was Barack Obama's vice president. So it'll almost be like fucking Obama for four more years instead of Biden. And plus, since Kamala Harris is the de facto president of the Senate, he gets to put the screws to a woman of color, too. And about that kind of stuff, oh, yeah, he cares. He definitely cares. So we've got that. Let's see here. Thank you to Will in Chicago. Yay, we're down to $500, and Steve's challenge has been met. And so that means we're down to 485. Golly. Another $185, and we're fully funded for last week. So thank you. Thank you, Will. Thank you so very much. Jeremy asks, I wonder if Rudy's planning on how he's going to spend all the $20,000 a day fees he charged from his long home. I thought heaven's streets were paved with gold. Yeah, but see, you can't chip away at the pavement. That gets you a quick trip south, Jeremy. You see, that's how that works. Elbert in Rhode Island, some sympathy. It was 37 degrees Fahrenheit at 7:20 this morning. 1 p.m. it was 38. Yeah, that time of year thou mayst in me behold, when I do all I can to protect myself from the cold. Brother Deacon Asa says, I'm pretty sure you misheard Jenna Ellis there, Bob. She said she lives her life to serve Jesus Christ, but she'd really like to service Donald Trump. Yeah, that mushroom reference and everything. P.S. Pacific Standard Time dinner hour, never had a chance this evening. Nope, just didn't. And there it went. And probably breakfast in Michigan tomorrow, too, for all I know. Lee in New York, super spreader Rudy. That's his only superpower. And the best part of it all is they're Republican legislatures. God, these people. Okay, so let's go over and check in with Scott. Hey, Scott.
Jesus loves the little children.
You're I'm not Jesus. Get your hand off my kid.
Hey. Suffer the children. Anyway.
Yeah, you had your video on there for a minute, I saw.
Yeah, I thought I was hitting something else, the mute button, but I hit the video button. Yeah, how do I look?
Fabulous. Absolutely yeah. Fabulous.
How do you like that wild look in my eye? It's getting to me, Bob.
You look like you could probably maybe audition for the road company of that new TV show about John Brown. the Kansas album cover.
Oh yeah.
With the famous painting of John Brown.
No, that wasn't John Barleycorn, was it?
No, that's John Brown on the Kansas album.
Yeah, I know. But didn't they do an album or a tune called John Barleycorn, or am I mixing my metaphors?
No, I think you're mixing your bands, because wasn't there an album called John Barleycorn Must Die?
No, maybe. I don't know.
Oh, God.
I'm still kind of in a haze.
John Barleycorn Must Die by Traffic. Yes, I would. Yes.
Okay. All right. Now it's all coming back to me like a hot kiss at the end of a wet fist. All right. Now, here's my technical question for the evening. I was on hold waiting to talk to you. I had the recliner back, and it sounded as if you were going to come to my call. And you know how you do in a recliner, you've got mine doesn't have a handle, a gear shift. So you have to kind of shift your weight and bring it back up into an upright position. And I can't tell whether I cut myself off or whether you just decided to take Todd's call first.
No, I was trying to take you together.
Ah, okay. All right.
And the magic, and for some reason or another, the magic worked last week, but it doesn't work this week.
Well, that's the world we live in, Bob. I'm telling you. And you'll never get used to it because it changes. Maybe not every week, maybe every fourth day, except for the weeks when it's every third day, except for the weeks when it's every other day. This is the world we live in, Bob.
Yes, it is.
Isn't it? I mean, come on. I don't want to be a naysayer or anything, but this was the call that I should have been on with you and Todd when the Electoral College came up. Because just the other night on Amazon Prime Video, I watched a 1-hour and 15-minute documentary from 2020, Safeguard, an Electoral College story. It's free if you're an Amazon Prime Video subscriber, and probably a couple of bucks if you're not. Now, I'm guessing, I hope you can figure a way to watch it, because I'm usually pretty good at, you know, when they do those personality tests, the standardized tests where you fill in the bubble, I'm usually pretty good at what they're after based on the questions, you know, those personality tests. When I watch these documentaries like this, without looking up the names, I try to figure out what their agenda is in the presentation. But I learned some stuff, unless it's GOP horseshit or something, about the Electoral College that I never knew before. And I'm not going to give any spoilers. I'm just going to say the title again, Safeguard, like the soap, an Electoral College story on Amazon Prime Video. And it's worth a little over an hour of your time just to watch it, because it presented some notions about why it may be a good thing that I hadn't considered. So anyway, check that out. Check that out, if only for your edification.
Okie doke.
And because it blew me away when the way it was presented, basically it said, if we're in a democracy, I mean, if that's the goal that we're aiming for, and majority rules in a democracy, in a strange way, the Electoral College can protect the minority if the majority is batshit crazy and there's no Electoral College in force. It really, I mean, I had to do like one of those Warner Brothers cartoons double take, when they got to that point in the proceedings, I said, my God, I never thought of that before. But anyway, Steve Forbes was the only person that I recognized. Remember good old Steve Forbes?
Oh, dear God.
How much did that fucker spend? And he didn't even get a single delegate, as I recall. He dropped out way early. But he was the only person that I recognized. But check it out when you get a chance. It's pretty cool beans. Let's see. There's something else. Getting back to Mitch McConnell. Have you ever read any of Robert Caro's books about LBJ?
No.
The final one, it's like a 4 or 5 book series. And these books are 4 inches thick, the hardback versions, 3.5 anyway. I mean, massive, massive paperweight doorstop tree-killing books. But I am waiting with bated breath for the final installment to come out because I've read all of the others over the years. And when LBJ got to the Senate, well, first he got to the House, the U.S. House of Representatives, in the 1930s, and immediately became mentored by Sam Rayburn, who for many years was the Speaker of the House, Mr. Sam, they used to call him. And then when he got over into the Senate in the 40s, old Landsmide Lyndon, he hooked up with Richard Russell, the senator, the segregationist senator from Georgia, and he was his mentor. Has anyone written from our side a good, legitimate book about Mitch McConnell's history? Because I would like to find... I was thinking about mentors, and then it made me think about LBJ and his mentors. And I'm trying to figure out who mentored Mitch McConnell in his early years in the Senate. And was he in the House? I don't remember.
I don't think he was.
I don't think so either. He was in a state House or Senate in Kentucky, or a Commonwealth, more appropriately. But I don't think he was in the United States House of Representatives. But does anyone, maybe one of the Horn family members, knows of a good book that touches on some of his history? Because I knew he had polio as a child. And then the next thing I know, he's in the Senate, bossing people around and snarling. I would be curious to know his story. And not a Republican as told by the GOP. I want the straight skinny, is what I'm saying. So if you know of such a book, and somebody lets you know
I'm just browsing his Wikipedia bio at the moment.
Yeah, but sometimes you can't trust Wikipedia.
Well, no, it's edited, but according to one of his biographers, McConnell transformed from a moderate Republican who supported abortion rights and public employee unions to the embodiment of partisan obstructionism and conservative orthodoxy on Capitol Hill.
God, how long ago would that have been? When did he?
1985. Let's see.
Well, that's what I'm thinking.
You know, it's really kind of vague. Not a lot of help.
Well, let's see. Who were the Republican movers and shakers in the mid '80s? The one from Utah was still around. He was younger then too. What was his name? He just retired recently. Oh, you know who I'm talking about. I can't think of his name. I'm drawing a blank. Grassley. I'm sorry, say it again.
Let's see. He was preceded in the Senate by Walter D. Huddleston.
Sounds like a Chamber of Commerce member.
Walter Darlington D. Huddleston, a Democrat from Kentucky who represented the state in the United States Senate from 73 to 85. And he lost in 84 to McConnell in an upset.
There were a couple of halfway decent Democratic senators from Kentucky years ago in the early 60s, late 50s, early 60s. See, this is they still have the audacity to you know, it's embossed on the napkins, the paper napkins in the Senate dining room, the world's greatest deliberative body.
Here's a particularly, this just goes to show you, you know, if you know the Star Wars universe, You know how young Anakin eventually becomes, you know, teenage Anakin, and then becomes Darth Vader, right?
No, I only know.
Well, I guess I've spoiled it for you. The bottom line is, in 1963, young Mitch McConnell attended the August rally on the Mall, the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom, where MLK gave the I Have a Dream speech.
Yeah, I knew that.
He went to civil rights rallies. As far as any kind of a mentor, he interned as an aide to John Sherman Cooper.
Yeah, that was the Republican that I was trying to think of.
Yeah.
He was also on the Warren Commission, John Sherman Cooper was.
So I guess that's sort of an answer. But it really matters not, Scott.
Yeah, but well, wait a minute. How in the world did a young Republican in 1963, 50 some odd years ago, attending the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom, all these years later, what was the thing that caused him to break bad?
Using power.
The terminology.
Power.
The,
power. Okay, you know, he enters into his own in 1984, and that is in the midst of the so-called Reagan Revolution. And that's how, and then, you know, he pursued power because he had been taught to pursue power by his mentor, and the road to power went through hardcore, unrepentant, racist Confederate Kentucky politics. Now, I'm sure folks like our buddy Dave in Kentucky, Stan, can expand on that. And thank you, Dave, by the way, for jumping in and helping out through the U.S. Postal Service. Thank you, Dave.
And I'd like to thank one of the Daves for sending me an exhaustive technical tip on how to get over-the-air TV signals. Because my cable system is in a snit with, or I shouldn't say my cable system, the owner of Channel 8, the CBS station here in San Diego, decided to say fuck you to my cable system because they haven't convinced them to fork over more money so that we poor beleaguered homebound COVID sufferers can watch Channel 8 CBS San Diego. And I posted about it last night, and Dave, I don't know which Dave it is, because we have several, but it's my Facebook friend Dave from the show, the Horn Family. He sent me, told me exactly what longitude and latitude to point my antenna for a crystal clear picture. And I thank him. A tip of the old rabbit ears to you, Mr. Dave.
It's all in how you point the rabbit ears.
Indeed it is. But getting back to Mitch and his formative years, his Wonder Bread years or whatever, even back during the two terms of Reagan and even Daddy Bush, the Republicans had not gone batshit crazy. I mean, like they are today. I thought that all that shit started when Newt, from Georgia. Yeah, that'll tell you
that's
Georgia right there.
But see, that's really mostly overlap because see, when I was in the Atlanta area at CNN, Newt was already an up and comer. I mean, he was a noisy backbencher, but you knew that from Gwinnett County, Georgia. But that's, you know, that's 87. And he's already starting his push for power. So I don't think you can credit Newt with Mitch.
That's what I was saying. And even in comparison, the Republicans today, compared to how Newt was when he first took control, he wasn't even quite as crazy as they've gone on to become. See, and the thing that gets me thinking about this, I just finished a book. Let me get the title so I can recommend it to you and the Horn family, because it's a little book that I saw talked about on C-SPAN Book TV the other day. And this old computer of mine. Wait a minute. Hang on here. Let me get the correct title because I'll blow it if I don't. I don't know what button to push, Bob. I just don't know.
Well, while you're searching, I want to share a story that Merle just sent.
Yeah, I got it here.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, the book, and it's only less than 200 pages. And the name of the book is Daisy Petals and Mushroom Clouds, LBJ, Barry Goldwater, and the Ad That Changed American Politics. And it's by a person whose last name is Mann, M-A-N-N. And I forget whether it's a man or a woman. That it just, for some reason, I didn't pay attention to that. I heard about it on C-SPAN 2 Book TV about a month ago, and I said, I want to read that book. Because the Daisy ad is the ad that changed everything. And they talk about its impact, its history, the politics of that era. And I can't recommend it enough. Check that book out. Definitely read that book. Because I remember, I didn't see it live, but I remember the coverage. Because it only aired once. It was on Monday night at the movies on NBC one time as a paid placement. And the only reason we know about it today is it was talked about on the news for weeks, maybe months. And it just went down in the annals of history as being outrageous. I mean,
it became a changed everything moment.
Well, yeah. Yeah. But definitely read that book. I know that you probably got other books.
Well, I did want to. There were a couple of things I wanted to mention on the way out the door this evening.
Oh God, I didn't realize it was a.
It comes out of Alabama. This one story does. Senator Larry Dixon. Now, Republicans, Republicans. But sometimes you run across one, and generally the community may not agree with him, but they say that he's a decent human being. So in the case of this guy, he was a member of the state Senate of Alabama for 27 years, and he also was the longstanding head of the Alabama Board of Medical Examiners that licenses physicians. And last week, I mean, among other things, get this. At one point in time, he spoke out against tax breaks for dog tracks. That takes some courage on the part of a Republican to speak out against any kind of tax break. I'm sure.
What state is he in?
Alabama.
Alabama.
Well, it was, because he's dead.
Oh, no.
He's dead at 78, and he died of COVID. And this is a well-written piece from AL.com by Amy Yerkanen. Former Alabama senator and longtime chair of the Alabama Board of Medical Examiners, Larry Dixon, died last week at age 78 from COVID-19, according to a close friend. But before he passed, he had one last message for the people of Alabama. A warning to prevent more deaths from the virus that took his life. Dr. David Thrasher, a critical care pulmonologist in Montgomery, said his friend was exposed at a social gathering. He treated his friend early in his illness. Thrasher said Dixon spoke to his wife, Gaynell Dixon, briefly before he was placed on the ventilator, and that the family wanted to spread that message to protect the people of Alabama. We messed up, Dixon said. We just let our guard down. Please tell everybody to take this thing seriously and get help as soon as you get the virus. Well, bless his heart, wear the damn mask and try not to get the virus might have been a better and more enduring message. But the fact of the matter is, we messed up. Early on in the history of Alabama, one of the mottos that they proposed for the new state was "Here We Rest," and Jason Isbell used that as the title of one of his albums, and it's brilliant. But "Here We Rest." Well, maybe we need to translate "We messed up" into Latin and make that the new motto of Alabama, because Alabama's on a list of states that if you go to it, whenever you go back home, you're supposed to quarantine for 14 days because they are on fire with it. At one point in time, they were last week, they had 3,000 new cases in one day. And in the last week, all their hospitals are hitting all-time highs. And so, you know, it's that passage where the reporter, Amy Yercanon, writes, he spoke to his wife, Gaynell Dixon, briefly before he was placed on the ventilator. And those were the last words they spoke. That was the end, Scott.
Because once you're on that thing,
You're unconscious, you're sort of twilight conscious. You can't speak, you can't move, you can't see, but you can hear everything around you. And that's got to be it is what I've described, horizontal crucifixion.
And he was at a social gathering when he was exposed.
Yeah.
Jesus.
But he had enough responsibility at the end to say we messed up. Let our guard down. I don't know that Alabama ever put its guard up. On the other hand, here in West Virginia, you've got Make West Virginia Great Big Old Governor Jim Justice, who has told the people of this state, we know how to die. Now we got to learn how to live. No shit. He said
that. Well, do you remember several months ago, maybe 6 months ago, 5 months ago, I pondered aloud while speaking with you and the Horn family and said, I wonder if this will not serve as some sort of reset button, you know, like a timeout, like in school or as you're being raised.
Right, and we generally said no.
Well, that may be a conversation worth having again. To check our mileage here and see where we're at. Because this thing is not going away anytime soon, if it ever does. And I know it's too late in the proceedings to delve into that, but we are screwed. We are. That used to be my my tagline back in the long ago, well, recent innocent days. We're all screwed, Bob. I didn't know how right I would end up being.
And when you're looking at 500,000 people dead by, say, Inauguration Day.
Yeah.
It sounds monstrous any way you put it. If eventually the people who are going to die from it were the people who are flagrantly not taking the necessary precautions, well, that'd be one thing. But this is not, that's not how it's working here. It's not going to be 500,000 people who scoffed at wearing masks. It's going to be a whole lot of innocent people from people who didn't wear masks at a wedding in Brooklyn with 1,000 people in it not wearing masks, who then spread it, you know, for all we know, into Connecticut, Rhode Island, New York State, Pennsylvania, God alone knows, New Jersey.
Earlier this afternoon, I believe on MSNBC, they were interviewing a doctor or a health official of some sort. I don't know where or their name or anything. But they were saying, well, when did this start, doctor? What caused this surge? And the doctor answered in a loud, steady voice, Halloween. What the fuck, Bob? Halloween?
I know.
I don't cry easily, okay? I've got kind of a callus on over top of my cry mechanism. But this thing in recent days has brought me to tears, Bob. To literal, actual, wet, down my chubby cheeks tears.
I understand.
Because it's not, it was, It was eminently avoidable had we but had someone in
precisely
charge.
If Donald Trump had mowed down, if Donald Trump had dropped a bomb that killed 300,000 Americans, it would be no different than what it is right now. And, this and, was and, deliberate and malicious and willful and intentional.
And something that hit me the other day, like 4 months ago, not the other day, but about 4 months ago, and I may have mentioned it on the show, the fact that we had not seen mass shootings in a while. We don't need mass shootings. We got this. We got the fucking COVID. We got the Rona.
Right, and not and not taking the precautions to keep from getting it constitutes patriotism. Just like we can't, you know, after a mass shooting, we can't talk about guns because it's too soon.
We've lost our mind. We may have lost our way. Hopefully, after January 20th, we'll be able to get back on track. But even that is going to be
sketchy.
An extremely heavy lift.
Yep.
All right, man. It's 5:05. I heard the whistle. The whistle was late, but I heard it.
Yep. You take care, Scott.
I will, Bob. And Horn family, you take care, too. And if you can possibly do it, Mr. Ossoff and Reverend Warnock could use a couple of bucks.
Here, here.
It is the most important thing you will do between now and January 5th.
Here, here. Thank
okay,
you.
I love you, Bob. I love you all out there, Horn family. Please stay safe.
Safe
and just keep thinking good thoughts and being kind to one another. That's all we can do.
That's all we got. Thank you, Scott. You take care now.
Right,
bye.
Take care.
Our buddy Scott in San Diego. Let's see. Thank you to Frank. Thank you, Frank, for jumping in. That gets us a little closer. Much appreciated. So very much appreciated. We're closing in on finishing off fundraising for last week. And that takes us down to, I think, 440. So we got 140 bucks to wipe out last week and then 300 for tonight. So 340, 440. That means tomorrow we'll be at 740. But thank you for getting Thursday finished off and a good chunk of Friday. Much appreciated. Orrin Hatch, Utah. Thank you, Todd. And out of all of this, we gotta end on, come on, got to have a little fun. So we had the story last week about how Joe Biden got a hairline fracture of his ankle while roughhousing with his dog. Dog's name Major, I think. And as a result of that, Joe's going to have to walk around with a boot on one ankle for a while, you know, to let the ankle heal. Being how it's Moran Monday and all, well, you need to know that's no boot. I mean, it's a boot, but it's not what you think it is. No. You know who knows what it really is? The QAnon Goonies. Mm-hmm. A retweet came through from someone named Joyce Ramgady, hashtagged QAnon and WWG1WGA. That's their marching slogan. And Joyce Ramgady said, get the hockey puck.
Biden has an ankle bracelet. Biden didn't hurt his foot. He's got ankle cuffs on.
Because, see, Q has already had Joe Biden arrested. And they're covering it up with the ankle boot because it's all they can do. Another QAnon Goonie said, Amazing how common right ankle injuries are with these criminals. Yeah. Because they think the storm is coming. And the storm is when all the QAnoners are going to sit around and watch all those pedophile baby blood drinkers who get together and eat fricasseed baby in the basement of a pizza parlor in D.C. that doesn't have a basement. And all everybody's going to get arrested. And Joe Biden already has been. Mm-hmm. Yep. Oh, and hey, Kevin. Note from Kevin. Hey, an entire shift at the Hartford, Connecticut processing plant got quarantined because an employee tested positive. Hartford processes our mail here in Pioneer Valley, Western Mass. I deliver in Amherst, where the H is silent, and we haven't gotten first-class flats or magazines for 5 days running now. The mail is getting more sporadic. Jesus, Kevin, this is getting more apocalyptic by the day. I'm not laughing. Damn. Well, there are 24 days left in calendar 2020 and 44 days until real 2021 begins. So thank you one and all for supporting the program. Thank you so much. We will be at 7:40 tomorrow, but we knocked some of it down, and thanks to all of you who did. Thank you so very much. That's how we keep this all on the air. Thanks to our Patreon subscribers, our PayPal subscribers. We always need new subscribers. If you're new to the program, you know, you can set yourself back by not quite an entire stick, set yourself back by not quite a half a stick of gum per day by becoming a $10 a month subscriber and just keeping liberal, independent, non-corporate broadcasting on the air. Maybe think about it. Thanks to our a la carte contributors. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Remember, brand new Malloy on the way at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on HeadOn.live, the best place to listen to the first run of Malloy. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Please stay safe. The best way to stay safe is to stay home. If you can't stay home, and many of us can't, take every precaution you possibly can. Don't let your guard down. Wear your mask. Make sure it's properly adjusted. Wear your gloves. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Carry your hand sanitizer wherever you go. Hell, sanitize your gloves before you take them off, and then sanitize your hands. Take your mask off with your gloves, then take your gloves off after sanitizing, then take your gloves off, then sanitize your hands. Maintain your social distance. 10 feet at least between people wearing masks. If people aren't wearing masks, don't get near them with a 20-foot battle lance. Try not to be in the same building. And for God's sakes, if somebody comes towards you hollering, "That ain't no boot. That's hiding his ankle monitor bracelet. Q's done arrested Joe Biden." Avoid that person like the plague. Because when they're hooting all of that, they won't be wearing a mask. And they are the plague. Later, y'all.